across the UK, online and on DAB.
Enjoy the anarchic nightly on-air battle as Broadcast Protocol gets logged through the studio window. Suspend your disbelief.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Now, more than ever before, mankind finds himself at a crossroads. One way lies devastation and destruction. Another way lies total annihilation. I thank Woody Allen for that thought, which he had 30 or 40 years ago, but surely it does apply more to us now on planet Earth than ever before. So much so that I don't feel I am adequate to talk about those things in an important position, such as a radio programme. So as far as I'm concerned, you can keep your general elections, you can keep your Brexits, you can keep your... Who am I?
Tommy Boyd.
Thank you, Nikki. I think perhaps a quick word about myself might be a good idea at this point. I'm not going to give you my life story, obviously. Just a couple of minutes on who I am. I say I'm not going to give you my life story, but I was born on the 14th of December 1952. And that means nothing to anybody. And yet it should. Not because of me, but because all I knew about my birth when I was a little boy from my mum was that I was born on a bare mattress on the floor in a corridor in a West London hospital with no medical presence. My mum delivered me herself, and she said to me this was because everyone was very busy. So when you're a child, you simply accept that you're here and you move on. And then one Christmas when I was 14, I got a Guinness Book of Records for a Christmas present, and I was flicking through it, as you do, and I came across disasters. And the biggest disaster that ever hit mankind was the bubonic plague, which killed 70 million people. So, plague. Then underneath that, famine. The famine of China in the recent times, the 1950s, after the Cultural Revolution. I was going down it like this. And then I came to the greatest man-made disaster of all time. London, December the 8th to December the 12th. 12,000 people minimum, could be 20 or 30,000 people, died in London around me where I was being brought into the world and right across London because of this hideous, what was called the London Killer Smog of 1952. It was a sulfuric gas that was so potent and so thick that you literally couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And my dad, when he got the phone call to say that I'd been born, he was working at Heathrow Airport, and he walked out of the Nissen hut, and he was going to carry on walking through this pea super. You couldn't see 3 feet in front of you until he got to the perimeter track, and then he'd be able to find his way to the hospital. And he set out from the Nissen hut, he told me, and he walked and walked and walked, and half an hour later he hadn't got to the perimeter track, but he saw a building with the lights on. So he knocked on the door. And do you know what it was? It was the building he'd left.
No.
He'd walked around in a complete enormous circle, which had one advantage. It led him to be sure that he had one leg shorter than the other. No, this is going somewhere, because then 60 years later, my hip starts to give way. And long story short, I've got an artificial hip, and it's because I inherited that from my father. My right leg was an inch and a half shorter than my left leg, but I didn't realise until I had the operation, which was about 6 or 8 weeks ago. There are some in-between bits in my life.
I was going to say, you did say it wouldn't be a whole life story.
I was a dolphin trainer. I worked as a stand-up comedian. I did 2 years as a journalist, so I kind of know my way around journalism, you know. And then a lot of children's television, and then a lot of talk radio, which I loved. And then I got fed up with the travel, so I went to work for a local BBC radio station, which was near my home, but I got bored, and I went to another radio station and got bored, and then I went to work for an internet radio station where the boss ended up going to prison for VAT fraud. And that's when things started to go wrong. And a friend came to me with a business proposition. He was living in Spain. He knew a factory where they made garden forks, and he knew another farm down the road where they made fork handles. This isn't a two Ronnie's joke.
I was going to say, I've heard this.
And he said you could buy £7,000 worth of these things and you could sell them in this country for £45,000. And not only that, he knew a lorry that every week drove from London to northern Spain, loaded up, and then drove back empty so we could transport them free of charge. So I shelled out. It didn't work out for a whole bunch of reasons. I had to put the house into my wife's name. Otherwise, we risk losing it. To complete the charade, I had to move out. I stayed in a hotel for a few days. That was too expensive. I tried a room in a house, but it was a nightmare. The bloke who owned the house was the landlord. He would spend all day in the house watching daytime television. My room was so small. I had a single bed and a wardrobe. I had to get no chair. I had to go downstairs and watch Jeremy Kyle and then, what's that bloke, Jimmy Dickinson?
Oh, God, no. David Dickinson.
And he would sit there watching the television in his bare feet. And men's feet are never pretty. And his, I'm not going into details. And to cap it all, he would sit there with a jar of cockles and eat them with a toothpick. So one night I got hammered and the next night I got hammered again. Only this time I didn't go back and I slept in a park. And that was when it all really started to go terribly wrong. And the beard grew. And I was pretty much itinerant. It was a warm summer, so I could do it. How I ended up with a shopping trolley on the five-a-side pitch opposite a radio station which we all know and love called Talk Sport, I don't know. But allegedly, I started knocking on the door, asking them for someone called Ian Collins' autograph.
Yes.
And that was when one of the staff at TalkSport kind of recognised the voice and a sort of journey back began. I wasn't ready to come and work for this radio station when they started. And there's still a ways to go with some of the things and issues that I'm...
But you're getting there, Tom.
Thank you. So what I'm saying in the longest possible way, I said I wouldn't go on, but that's me, dear listener. Yes. How are you, dear listener? How are you? I know.
Oh, you've remembered.
How to broadcast.
There's someone there.
Oh, a listener.
Yes.
No, I'm acutely aware always that there is a listener there. And I will talk to you, listener, as opposed to talking to myself and to Nikki. A little bit later on the show, you and I will just have a one-on-one, I think. Just you and we'll just chat as though, you know, we're in the same room or, you know, I'm not going to say in the same bed, but you know what I mean? Properly. I'll talk to you properly a little bit later on because it's 10 o'clock and it's a Friday evening. And I haven't got much planned, Nikki.
Okay.
But one or two things up my sleeve.
Good. We like that.
That, you know, I think will be fun. If anybody wants to talk about the general election, I suppose you have to. You can give us a call. Can you remind us of the communication systems?
Yeah, okay. If you want to give us a call, it's 0344 499 1000, or you can text TALK and your message to 87222, or you can tweet us at Talk Radio.
I'm going straight to Alan, who's called from Birmingham.
Oh, Tommy, good to have you back.
Well, let's decide that whether that's the case at 1 o'clock, shall we?
Well, it's been a while since we last heard you over the airwaves.
I know you use the listener's royal we there, Alan.
Well, I speak on behalf of everyone on the Talk Radio listeners page, on the Tommy Swine page on Facebook.
Oh, but I always worry about listeners who refer to themselves in the we.
Well, you've got a load of listeners who look forward to seeing you back on the radio.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much indeed. What have you been up to in the last 20 years, then?
Well, the sports reports have retired. Because I used to do sports reports for you.
I remember.
Very tired now.
And what are you doing now, then, Alan, with your time?
Give regarding Mr. Leary nonsense, which reminds me, why isn't Miss Boyle with you?
No, you have to say it a little bit more slowly, sorry.
Why isn't Kath with you?
Why isn't Kath? Kath with me?
Kath's here. She's doing the important jobs, because Tommy can't do his pushing buttons and things. Because, you know, it's his first night back.
Right.
I thought Edward had done that.
Yeah, you're betraying a touching intimacy with the programme, Alan.
Why?
I think that's for you.
Okay,
I'll let you go. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, he's obviously...
It's Friday night, isn't
more
it?
More callers than I have. That'd be more interesting than he was. No, I didn't say that. So where was I? So, yeah, one or two things planned this evening. One thing that I do desperately want to tell you, listening, I must tell you this, I am so excited about a piece of research that has recently been done that has come my way, and I think it is genuinely earth-shattering. I'm astonished that so little is known about it. Once you've got your head around the facts that I want to just lay out, and there's only a few of them, this is not the Encyclopedia Britannica, I guarantee that you will be gobsmacked.
Really?
Yes.
What's it about?
It's about the fact that we are the only country on earth that has never had a revolution. Britain. England. England has never had a revolution.
No, I don't suppose we have. I've never even thought about
it. They've had some fantastic ones that have turned countries round.
Yeah.
Sometimes for the better. But it gives the people a sense of pride that they threw out an invading country or they got rid of a corrupt regime. And we've never done it.
So are you thinking about starting?
No.
Ah.
That because A, that's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I was just checking.
And B, it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
Because as the man says in JFK, treason doth not prosper. For if it prospers, they dare not call it treason. See, so no, I'm not suggesting that we have a revolution.
No.
Let's have a quick word with Eduardo, who's calling on his mobile. Good evening, Eduardo.
You love Spike Stickhead.
Ah, there's a throwback. If you're a recent listener to this radio station, way back I used to do this thing called a human zoo in which people could call up and go straight to air without being groomed, vetted, or whatever phrase it is that's used nowadays for people before they go on air on a radio station. And Eduardo, who's gone now, was somebody who used to ring up and say that. The call that my wife liked best was a caller who used to ring up every night and say, "May I pleasure your wife?"
And she enjoyed that, did she?
Well, she found it amusing, because I always used to say, of course, that'll save me 20 minutes when I get in. But the reason I mention that is because, and I think you... Can I name drop?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. The nephew of an author called Hilaire Belloc. Has anybody heard of Hilaire Belloc except me?
I haven't.
Belloc. The nephew of a man called Hilaire Belloc, fantastic creative character, has written a play. He's at Oxford at the moment doing the history of art. Cambridge doing the history of art. And in his spare time, he's written a play and it's based on the human zoo. It's not my name is used, but what it is, it's a play about the human race and the human species. And they all pop up on the human zoo and they do things. And he's starting to put it together. And a lot of it is pre-recorded because the callers are going to be pre-recorded. So he started recording the calls. And he's got an actor to do the caller who does, "May I pleasure your wife?"
Has he?
Yes.
And who is it?
Robert Downey Jr.
Really?
I know.
Wow.
I know. And the way he's doing it is he's going to, a bit like on Frasier where celebrities phone up. He's going to get all sorts of...
That's brilliant.
To be the callers, and then the actor who's going to be me does, you know, pretends that they're real calls and so on and so
and
forth.
And who's going to be you?
Well, I was a bit miffed. He didn't ask me.
Let's go. But if you had a choice, who would you choose for you in an ideal
world?
That's
a really good question, and a lot of people enjoy that question, don't they? Who would you like to play you in a I can see you and I know what you look like. You're 5'10", blonde. No. We had the conversation earlier.
Yes, I'm 5'8" and brunette.
Give us an idea. Well, give people listening an idea of what you look like.
Oh,
if
my
you
goodness,
can tell us who should play you.
God, that is hard, isn't it?
Personality-wise, you're more Ally McBeal, sort of.
Oh, gosh.
Bright,
am I?
But, you know, yeah.
I wish I was as skinny as her. Well, who would you say I look like famous-wise if you had to sort of put it out there?
Really good question.
People used to always say I look like Chrissy Hynde.
Chrissy Hynde. Yes.
A little bit.
Chrissy Hynde is spot on. That's really good work, yeah.
Okay, so for you,
I'd
for this...
like to have been played by Robin Williams.
Oh, yes!
Because I'm that...
I can see that.
Yeah, okay.
No, I can see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
And I've always... felt... Watched Robin Williams and said to myself... Because he was brilliant at
something. He was a genius.
And he made some rubbish films. And said to myself, if I was really talented, I'd be like Robin Williams. But I'm not. But I can see what he's trying to do and how he does it. And anyway, we were in Spain on holiday the day that Robin Williams died.
Oh, yeah.
And I turned on the television, as you do when you're on holiday, and we had it tuned to English TV stations, which is pathetic, but we did. And I turned it on and the presenter went, and the news this morning, Robin Williams, the actor, has died. And I was quite upset. Mm. So I went into the kitchen where Jane was making a cup of tea and I said, Robin Williams has died. And she went, oh, no. I said, yes, I always felt some sort of affinity with him. She went, oh, darling. I said, you know, he committed suicide and I know it's a silly thing to say, but I just wish I'd been there. I could have helped him. And she went, Robbie Williams. I said, no, Robin Williams.
How many people across the country had that conversation?
Do you
though?
Think so?
Oh, a lot of people.
Let's take
definitely.
Let's take a call, shall we? I think we've got an Ian on line 10.
Hello, Tommy.
Ian, lovely thanks for ringing.
Have you back?
Thank you.
I can remember way back into the old days, back into the 90s, when you were on the first incarnation of talk radio. I think it was on medium wave or FM back in those days.
You see, you say incarnation, and it's a real coincidence that you should say incarnation, because I was around at my friend's house this morning, and we were having a cup of coffee, and he put carnation milk in his.
Now that is going back.
Oh, he's 83.
Can I take you back to possibly the most amazing piece of journalism or the most amazing story I ever heard on radio?
Okay.
I mean, I rate you alongside the likes of Kenny Everett in that you are the person I would actually rush home to listen to. Anyway, this concerns a Saturday back in the late 90s when I was actually at work and had the radio on. And tell me to stop if it's a bit, if it's something you can't talk about. But it
well, I won't know until you've said it, will I? So then we're screwed.
It concerns the day before Princess Diana died and the story that you broke on the morning. I think it got denoticed about midday, but between 9 in the morning, it was a Saturday, 9 in the morning and midday, I was at work and I was sat in my office at work, and what you said, well, that absolutely blew my mind. Can I go on?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to make sure you can, and whilst I'm making sure that you can, here are lots of things you should buy.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
And we've got Alan, who is, or is it Ian? It's
Ian.
Ian. Yeah, sorry, Ian. I haven't had a chance to find out what you want to say, so go ahead, fire me.
Okay, I hope it doesn't fire you. You announced that there would be, this is the day before Princess Diana died in Paris, early in the morning in that Paris tunnel, and you announced on the radio that the following day there would be a statement from Kensington Palace, which I think was where Princess Diana was, Lady Diana was keeping court away from Charles. They were splitting up at the time, or rather that they were divorced at the time, but you said there would be the most amazing revelation and shock that would bring the royal family to its knees, something that would absolutely shock the world, something that would be happening on the following day, on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And nobody else, none of the other media picked up on that. Because I was, when I got home at midday, I was tuning around and nobody else was picking it up. And but when I was home just after 12, even you dropped it, or your the presenter coming on after you dropped it.
Yeah, it was.
And it was.
They sat on it. All right, well, Ian, I think you. I think you've already worked out, Ian, what's going on here. A great many people believe that they've lived before, don't they, Nikki?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you believe that you might, in a previous life, have been Florence Nightingale?
No.
But you know that such things...
But I hope to come back.
You believe in reincarnation?
Yes.
I'm back to Woody Allen again. He said, I believe in reincarnation. I would like to come back as Warren Beatty's fingertips.
Oh.
But I don't believe I've lived previously.
No.
I believe I've lived subsequently.
Mm. Explain.
I've lived later. I have been... there before, not back there before.
So you've seen into the future?
I've been in the future.
Yeah, okay.
I feel it. I feel as I've been to the future, and it just about works. Good, just about.
How far
bad.
Are we talking into the future?
2200s, 200 years from now.
That far ahead?
Yeah. But
wow.
Bits, yeah.
You could make a fortune. You could put bets on about things that are going to happen.
That would sully the purity of the suspicion. I'm not saying that I have lived subsequently,
no, but
I sometimes feel as though, but I don't remember anything of what Ian was saying, to be honest with you, and I'm not going to claim that I did say that something terrible was going to happen to the royal family the following
day. That's quite spooky. He remembers
he believes
that you've said that.
And he probably has been telling lots of people that I can predict the future or something like that. But I can't. If I could predict the future, I wouldn't have had a packet on Rafael Nadal to beat Dominic Thiem in the Madrid Open this afternoon.
Well, you're an idiot.
Well, I was an idiot, and Thiem absolutely spanked him in two sets. Let's keep on the move, shall we? Ken calls from a place very dear to my own heart. Ken in Newcastle.
Good evening, Tommy.
Ken.
You mentioned earlier about the great disasters that had affected the Earth, the planet Earth, but you missed out the greatest one, Tommy. The great flood. There was a worldwide flood when every living soul died except 8 human beings. It's recorded in the Bible in Genesis chapter 7.
You're a bit wrong here, Ken. You've got your facts wrong, unfortunately. But I don't mind. I'm used to people calling in who haven't got their facts right. But I'm here to tell you you haven't. So thanks. Sorry?
Are you going to allow me free speech? Are you going to cut me off now?
Well, only if you repair the damage that you have done by broadcasting false information.
I'm telling you the truth.
No, you've got your facts wrong.
You have your facts wrong, my friend.
No, this is my point, you see. You're not a journalist, are you, Ken?
I'm a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. I believe the Bible. And
you're not a journalist or a lawyer, are you?
Of course not. Who needs to be that?
Well, you do. If you're going to broadcast, you do need some semblance of understanding of information, its validity, and the accuracy of what it is that you're purporting, okay?
The information we're following, my friend, is the word of God in the Bible, which you seem to deny.
It doesn't make any difference to the fact that you got your facts wrong.
Are you Antichrist, Tommy?
You got your facts wrong.
Are you Antichrist?
Why aren't you interested in finding out how you got your facts wrong?
I'm interested in finding out if you're Antichrist.
Why aren't you interested in my point, which came first, which is that you've got your facts wrong?
Your point is a fallacy.
I can prove to you, and I'll bet you £100 now to your one, I can prove to you, right now, standing here, I can prove to you that you've got your facts wrong. Are you man enough for the bet?
I don't bet, but I'll listen to what you have to say if you allow me to reply.
Are you man enough to admit when you find out that you're wrong?
I know I am not wrong.
No, but that's not the question. The question is, are you big enough to admit... I'm going to shut up now, okay, because this is so easy.
Well, go ahead then. Show me where the Bible
is wrong. The mistake that you are referring to, if you were listening, and I suspect you're somebody who has partial listening syndrome, the mistake that you made when you were listening and then compounded by vocalising it is that you blamed me and not Norris McWhirter.
I didn't blame anybody. I just stated...
It was Norris McWhirter who left the flood off the list that I read out.
You're talking about the...
Do you know who Norris McWhirter is?
Yes, my friend.
Who's Norris McWhirter, Ken?
I have no idea who...
You have no idea who Ross and Norris McWhirter are? Did you never watch Roy Castle?
Guinness Book of Records?
Come on, King, get with the pace. It's 2017. There's still time for you on Earth before you go to meet your maker, of which you are absolutely assured you will, because you will say to your maker, I did so much good when I was on Earth, I rang up radio stations and corrected them incorrectly. Thank you so much, Ken. And that was the worst Geordie accent I've ever heard.
That wasn't a Geordie accent. And you know, if he'd taken that bet, you could have got the money back that you'd lost on Nadal.
No, I lost a lot more than that on the dial. A lot more than that on the dial. I'll explain in just a moment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
We'll get you talking.
Yeah, I bet sometimes. It makes everything more interesting having a bet on any old sport. Who cares about Middlesbrough versus Aston Villa? But if you've got a bet on it, it's alive. And so this afternoon there's some tennis coming over from Madrid.
Yes.
And I couldn't see how Rafael Nadal, who's back to his best, could possibly...
He's not back to his... I disagree.
He's definitely not back to his...
No, he's definitely not back to his... I would have said that before he lost, though.
Who's going to win Wimbledon?
Oof.
Let's ask Sean on line 8. Sean.
Hi, Tommy.
Before you make your point, who's going to win Wimbledon?
Cliff Richard.
Actually, if this weather continues, you're probably right.
I've no idea. I'm not into tennis.
That was a very quick answer.
I don't know. I don't know. You say that, but that was a very good answer, mate.
Well, that's all I could think of really quickly.
Why did you call?
It's just good to have you back on again, because I used to ring up when you used to do the Human Zoo.
The Human Zoo. Who were you?
I was just Sean.
Oh, okay. Well...
And I've got many recordings that have I keep playing back.
Oh, God, have you?
There's loads on YouTube. They're brilliant.
So I'm told. I don't do that. I don't Google myself.
You should, because you're a good presenter.
I'm brilliant.
Do you think of... I've got one eye on my microwave because I'm cooking one of them burgers. So I've got them cheap burgers.
Yeah.
So I've got to keep an eye on the microwave and you at the same time. What do you think of Donald Trump?
I think he's great fun.
Oh, exactly my answer. I think
one of our enemies in life is tedium.
Yep.
And he's not tedious.
No.
He's just enormous fun. And every morning I turn on the news just to see if Donald Trump has done something else.
Yes, or what he's tweeted.
I
know. It's unbelievable,
and
isn't it?
Some of the stuff that he does is absolutely hilarious. And I like the fact that the Americans, who think they're so good, have now got this guy... who is leading their country, who is the figurehead of their country, who is the major representative of their country. And 40% of them who voted for him think it's fantastic and they're just loving every minute. And the rest of them are cringing. I mean,
ones who love every minute.
But they didn't have a lot of choice, did they? I mean, it was which of the two evils? That was the thing, wasn't it? But I like him.
I like him.
We're not going to do politics, though, this evening, although I'm... very grateful for your call and your obsequiousness and good luck
to have you back on the radio, Tommy. I hope it's a regular thing.
Okay, it's very kind of you. He was referring to a show called The Human Zoo, which happened on Talk Sport for about a year and a half, and was nowhere near as good as people remember it. Good luck with your burger. He's gone. Isn't that funny how the nostalgia...
Yeah.
The reason for nostalgia is because we're not satisfied with the present. And the present is never quite as good
as your memories.
As either things that you remember or your plans.
Tell the story you were saying to me earlier about Jimmy Osmond.
Jimmy Osmond came out with something on a radio interview a while ago, and I thought little Jimmy Osmond as he was...
He wasn't that little, actually.
He was full size.
bigger than the others.
Long-haired lover from Liverpool.
That was the first record I ever bought, I'm ashamed to say.
You should be.
I know.
No, I know. What age were you?
I was about 5.
It's a good one, what's the first record you ever bought.
No, but that is embarrassing. Anyway, carry on with the story, because this is interesting.
Little Jimmy Osmond, who I figured was probably not all that bright. You do jump to conclusions about people, but I did. He was interviewed on the radio and they said, what are you doing these days? And he came out with this. He said, well, we're touring. We're a kind of tribute to ourselves. He said, and we go out there. And as soon as we start a song that everybody knows, the audience applaud. He said, and the thing is, and this was where he was so perceptive. He said, they're applauding themselves. They're applauding the people they used to be. The people that bought that song, that knew all the words, that sang along to it into the hairbrush in the bedroom. And they're applauding how they think they were.
And the memories, the great memories, yeah. The nostalgia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked once with the Osmonds and it was very touching because you had the 4 or 5 brothers and then this really quite beautiful, elegant Osmond's sister, Marie. And there weren't enough dressing rooms to go round. So Marie had to get changed in the corridor. And to protect her privacy, the boys, all in their Osmond finery, you know, those sort of Elvis Presley white leatherette suits with sequin
sparkle and everything, yep.
They formed a circle around her so that she could change in the middle of them.
Sweet.
In this television studio corridor. Right? But they were all facing out.
Ah. Oh,
isn't that just that is, sweet? That,
but that's so Osmond.
And so Mormon.
Isn't it? Yeah, well, obviously. No, but that they were so clean cut, weren't they, the Osmonds? I loved the Osmonds.
Yeah, they were all right.
I used to love them.
I could see that he was a good-looking boy, Donny Osmond.
I know, I upset Jimmy Osmond once because he did come in once and I was talking to him and I said, oh, I did love Donny. And he went, oh, thanks very much.
Well, that's not a bright thing to say, is
it? But, you know, he knew that everybody loved Donny the most.
Oh, Nicky, yeah, but come on.
Sorry.
What I wanted to ask you was this, randomly. Could you remind the listener at home or in their, travelling in their vehicle or wherever, how they can get in contact with us if they would like to? If you don't want to get in contact with us, I do not take that personally. Sometimes a piece of radio is sufficiently interesting without you yourself, the listener, getting involved, and you can just sit back and enjoy it. Sometimes, listening to phone-in radio, you feel that you're at work because the caller keeps saying, give me a ring, tell me what you think, we'd love to hear from you. And I think to myself, oh, I better had them because... Yeah. So what I'm saying to you at home or wherever you are listening is, don't feel obliged.
No.
But here's how you do it if you want to.
If you'd like to, here's the number to call. It's 0344 499 1000. Or, of course, you can always text TALK and your message to 87222.
Could you do that phone number a bit more slowly once more?
Okay.
Because I can't... I often listen to radio stations. And sometimes I think I'll phone that guy and tell him. But the number goes.
Okay, again. Ready. 0344 499 1000.
1000. Okay, that's easy enough. I'll come back to the question I want to ask. I'm desperate to ask you a question. And I think you, listening, when you hear the question, really, you'll think to yourself, oh, yeah, I sort of do that as well, but I've never told anybody.
Well, I'm scared now.
Let's have a word with Eduardo, I think, has called back. Is that you again, Eduardo?
I must have dropped off the line. I don't know what happened there. Look, you know, let's get serious. You know, enough of these people ringing you up saying welcome back and all of this. I think that you, you know, clearly have shown your true colours tonight.
Yeah.
You know, you are absolutely an anti-Spaniard. It's so clear. Not only, you know, have you in the past, I've been told, poo-pooed the noble art of bullfighting, you know, made a mockery of it.
No, that's a lie.
Absolutely the truth. No, it's not the lie. You know, you have poo-pooed the famous story of the sole Northern Spanish DJ that averted World War III many years ago and made an absolute mockery of that as well. And now you're sullying the name of the Northern Spanish again, claiming that they are some kind of, you know, dare I say, pikey type people that would sell you fork handles that don't exist and saying that they ripped you off. I'll put it to you, that you are actually an agent for Madrid wanting to start a new civil war because the North is an autonomous region all of its own. What have you got to say to that?
I'll tell you what I've got to say to that. Somebody who calls himself Eduardo. Somebody who calls himself Eduardo. Somebody who claims that he is acting on behalf of the Spanish people. Somebody who therefore, by default, is pretending that he is Spanish. Have this.
Eduardo, ¿qué estás diciendo? ¿Por qué estás llamando y hablando así con una persona que lleva mucho tiempo esperando a hablar contigo de cosas buenas?
So, where did you get that from?
Yeah, so screw you, fella. Screw you, okay?
No,
thanks for your call, Eduardo.
No, you love to be mallet.
Bye. Thank you, Kath. Sometimes things just fall into place. And you wonder why you bother to plan a show. Catherine is fluent, I gather, in several...
Many languages.
Languages.
Didn't it sound beautiful slightly? As well? I'd love to know what she said as well.
Well, we don't know, do we?
No.
Except...
it put him in his place.
We'll never work here again. I've got this question for you, Nikki. And honestly, I've been waiting to ask you this for 30 years. And I know that when I ask it, everybody in the gallery and everybody at home will think to themselves, yeah, I do that, but I thought I was the only one.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
So this is the question, and it's a good question. It's a fantastic question, and I'm asking you listening. I'm going to ask Nikki, who's here with me, Tommy Boyd, at Talk Radio, and I'm going to ask the crew, but I'm asking you at home as well. And here's the question, Nikki. You ready?
I hope so.
Okay. I don't know how to word it. I'll tell you a story. Many years ago, I was comfortable with my sexuality. It didn't present me with any problems. But seeing the problems that some young men were facing because they were gay back then, and sometimes still do, which is awful, but there it is. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't an issue that I was going to have to deal with in my life. And my granddad used to watch the ballet on his telly, and a man called Rudolf Nureyev was dancing, and I decided to risk looking at Rudolf Nureyev
in
to see
tights.
If it did anything for me, so that at least I would get a certain kind of early warning that I was diverse, which of course is not a bad thing. But it's just something else to think about. Have you ever done that?
What, looked at Rudolf Nureyev's tights?
You know what I'm saying. Have you ever just checked out that you are not gay?
I haven't. Because
have
I,
you not?
I don't know how I would check it out. I just think I would know.
By looking at Chrissy Evert or something.
Yeah, I look at other women and I can appreciate they're attractive, but I don't think I want to go and do things with that woman.
Right.
And I think that's just my instinct, knowing that I am straight.
Well, do other men do it then? I'm getting worried that it's only me.
It's just you and men in tights.
Did you ever just check about your sexuality? I don't know what your sexuality is, mate.
I'm straight.
Okay.
I've never really had the inclination to...
You've never just wanted to just check?
No, I never just wanted to check.
You've never just looked at David Beckham just to see if there was anything there for you?
Well, I mean, David Beckham is an amazing specimen of a man, but yes. I wouldn't say I'd be, physically attracted to him or...
Well, who might you be attracted to if you were gay?
If I had to... Oh, that's a tough one.
Well, it's got to be David Beckham, because there's not much better than that.
Yeah. I mean, he is pretty good looking.
Yeah.
I think he's good looking. He's also hygienic, isn't he? Do you know what I'm saying?
He always looks pretty clean cut.
He does, He looks well groomed and
But you
everything.
Know that he'd be naughty in the bedroom.
No, I think he'd be considerate.
I think he'd be considerate, but I think he'd be naughty.
What? Go on.
Well, I can't go into it.
Yes, you can.
I'd like to go into it.
Well, go on then. No, all right. Kath, is it something that you've ever... just checked out on? What? I know you're a married mum and all the rest of it, but...
Well, yeah, because in the 1990s, everyone was a bit AC/DC for a while, weren't they?
I don't know.
Well, it became a thing where girls would snog in clubs just to get... usually to attract men, which I always thought was out of order. But no, I never was pulled towards that. And I have looked at women... Madonna for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah, but... I think the practicalities would get in the way. I couldn't touch
her. You were sort of drawn to Madonna because of...
Because she seemed like a woman in control.
Yes, there is an elixir about her.
But maybe
there?
There's a masculine thing about Madonna too.
Mm.
But I couldn't.
No.
I had dinner with Madonna in Birmingham. Before she was famous, she was over from Germany where they were just, the record company were just getting her going. And she was about to have a number 26 hit, and she was on a Saturday morning children's programme that I presented. And they said to me, you've got Madonna on the show tomorrow, will you look after her tonight in the hotel?
Oh.
So I went down and I met her, and she had a chaperone with her. And give you some, I was single at the time, give you some idea of how good my taste is in girls, I hit on the chaperone. No, I did.
And what stage was Madonna at? Was she?
She was already at the superstar stage in her mind.
In her mind. But what did she look like at that stage? Was she the sort
she
of rock
totally
chick?
Different from what she looks like now?
Yeah.
She had that lucky gap
yes.
in her front teeth, mm. and she had a nose that looked like she'd gone 14 rounds with what's his face. But she was very professional.
Was she a nice person?
She was remote.
Mm.
Let me
I
tell
can
you,
imagine that.
Here's a snippet of the conversation that I've never forgot. Me, Madonna, and this chaperone, who also looked like Chrissie Hynde, funnily enough. Oh. And so I said to Madonna, so you're going to be a pop star? She said, yeah. This is why she's picking at her three strands of asparagus, which is all she ate. She said, yeah. So sarcastically, I said, how well do you think you'll do? She said, I'm going to be the world's leading female rock star. And I went, oh, that's good. I said, then what are you going to do? Then, didn't miss a beat, she said, I'm going to be the world's leading Hollywood actress. Just right on the back end of that. This was somebody that nobody had heard of yet. Right, so then Mr. Clever Clogs said, oh, what are you going to do after that? Do you know what she said?
No.
Didn't miss a beat. I'm going to be the first female president of the United States. Like that.
Ooh.
Ooh. So, you know, when Kath or Catherine, I've forgotten which she prefers or hates... says Madonna, because of her strength,
mm.
she's absolutely right. Mm.
She is a strong woman.
Let's take a couple of calls, shall we? We'd go, I don't know if it's Richie or Jamie, so if it's Richie, hold on, Richie. Jamie, you're first. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
You are amazing, Tommy. I'm a big fan, and I've wanted to speak to you for a long time. But I've just got one question. You know when you're on the motorway?
When
you're driving along?
When I was driving?
But just on the motorway in general.
Oh, when one is on the motorway, yep.
Yeah. Do you ever think, like, what would happen if I put the handbrake on?
No, so what would?
No.
Well, you obviously
know.
Do. Do you?
Yeah, yeah, or if I just, like, decided to open the car door.
What? Keep going, so we can get a handle on this.
Oh, you know when you're waiting for the tube... And you think, what would happen if I just jumped in front of it?
Yeah, I sometimes have that.
Do you find that when you're on a balcony, on a high from a high building? That
yeah.
You, yeah.
Yeah.
I know people like that. I don't get it, but I've had people say to me, oh, I just want to go and jump over that.
I went up in a hot air balloon, and the woman said to me when we were high above the Alps, she said to me, you're scared, aren't you? Because I was standing right in the middle of the basket. And I said, no, the problem is I'm the opposite of scared. Every time I look over... I want to jump
and
out.
And fly.
Because I think I can fly.
Exactly. I can get that, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why people do that on when they're high up on a building looking out. They think, oh, just fly.
Did you
I've
read...
got a friend who, like, dreams every day that he can fly. So every time he wakes up in the morning, he thinks he can fly and he's always, like, disappointed.
Well, I sometimes have those dreams in which I'm flying. But
yeah.
I think dreams are very revealing about you as a person. And when I'm dreaming that I'm flying, all I'm thinking to myself is, this is going to be such a show-off thing to do to the girls. I'm going to be able to fly. And the fact that I'm only 5'8" won't get in the way of my pulling power anymore because I'm the only guy up here. Jamie, thank you for your call. I'll go to Richie, if I may. Thank you very much for your call, Jamie. I'll remind of the details of how to contact us. I'm Tommy Boyd. Nikki is here. And it's Richie, who's in...
Hi, mate. You there?
Hi. How are you?
Salmon. It's weird. I'm not a Mallet fan. I'm a Wahaday fan, do you get me? Battle of the Planets, then Whack a Day. Anyway, got a conversation, might be close to your heart. My brother, my elder brother, I'm 42 now, he's 48. Back at the time when he was 16, was the oldest person ever to get a YTS as a dolphin trainer in Flamingoland. Worked up there for 4 years with Pete Bloom. I'm sure you know the names and all that. And I shouldn't mention names. That's bad. But then came down to Brighton and then worked there for about 2 years because Flamingoland got shut down, basically, blah, blah, blah. And then I get a phone call from him because I was a student in Preston doing graphic design. I was a professional skateboarder and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, Tommy Boyd's just shut me down. I was like, what? And he was like, no, he's just led a protest in Brighton that shut him down. And I was like, huh? My hero off the telly every morning. What are you on about? And he was like, no, no, seriously. So tell me the truth, bud. Seriously, what happened? And I've been going back 30 years, yeah. Right? You know what I mean?
Oh, no, hold it right there, Richie. This is an interesting thing you dug up.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Hang on a sec, if you would, pal. I've got Sandra standing by on the next one. I'm going to say to Sandra, we'll call her back after the news. If I can stick with Richie up until 11 o'clock, I desperately want to talk to Sandra and everybody else who's calling in, but I don't want Sandra to get a warm ear. See if she's happy to come on at 11:05. Richie, it's a very interesting thing that you raise. I was a dolphin trainer, you obviously know that.
Yep.
I worked for 2 years whilst I was training to be a teacher. I worked at the Dolphinarium in the morning. I worked at the BBC in the afternoon voluntarily.
Really?
And then in the evening I worked as a stand-up comic in nightclubs. So I'm,
bloody hell, that's a
I have no
day,
idea
right?
how I qualified to lecture in the theory of child development, which is the only paper qualification
that's
I've
a
got.
Random lifestyle CV you've got.
I was doing
there,
seven but... dolphin shows a day. And I can do the spiel now, because it was
just
the same every time.
Man in Flamingo, like.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brighton Dolphinarium, and I'm now going to ask the dolphins to say good day to you. They are Poppy, Missy, Baby, Brinny, and
yeah.
Belle.
Yeah.
But I'd only been there 3 weeks when I realised it was cruel.
Got you. I mean, when my brother moved to Brighton from Flamingoland in Yorkshire, he said it's like a dump.
It is.
Literally. And
it was.
He hated working there, and but at the time, because he got, the lad who ran the Flamingoland stuff also had a place in Tenerife where it was all, I mean, the pool was massive there, do you get me? The dolphins were well looked after.
Well, at least they were outside. One of the many things that were wrong with the Dolphinarium in Brighton was that it was enclosed. So those poor dolphins never
saw sunlight.
The sun. They never smelt salt
water. It was tiny, wasn't it?
And here's the thing.
I've got from the Yorkshire Dolphinarium.
Yeah, here's the thing.
It's amazing.
Here's the thing, Richie. When I was there, there were six performing dolphins. One of them was born in captivity. Baby. And she did all the tricks. Because she was the only trained dolphin. Nobody could tell the dolphins apart. So we used to say, Prinny is now going to jump through the hoop. It was Baby. We'd say, Lucky is now going to sing Happy Birthday. And it was Baby. Baby was the whole show.
I didn't know that. Because I remember going to the show and I remember them singing Happy Birthday to me.
Do you remember
the
fish
birthday?
From mouth trick?
Yes.
The trainer would climb me.
Yes.
Well, what happened to me was I was hired as an announcer there. Because I could talk into a microphone. I watched the shows for 3 weeks till I knew them off by heart. And then one morning, that thing that happened to Mickey Rooney in all his films happened to me. The manager came down and he said, one of the dolphin trainers is sick. The other one's just been fired. There's nobody to do the show. So I put on the T-shirt and I went out there and I did it. But I didn't know there's a knack to the fish from mouth. You climb a ladder about 15 feet above the pool and you suspend a little sprat from your teeth. And the dolphin jumps up and takes it. Well, I didn't know you're supposed to lower your head. And then when the dolphin comes up, you come away again. And then you place the sprat in the dolphin's mouth. So I just closed my eyes and waited. And the dolphin hit me in the mouth with, you know, a hell of a blow. Knocked all my teeth back, split my lip. I'm covered in blood, concussed. I'm coming down the ladders. And the manager is behind the curtain at the back of the stage. And he just shouted to me, close the show, but don't let the audience see that you're hurt. So I learned a rule about show business there.
Yeah.
But it was wrong.
Yeah.
And right from 3 weeks in, me and all the other dolphin trainers said, we've got to close this place down. And it took us 20 years.
Good for you, though.
But here's the terrible thing. They told me that we're putting the dolphins back in the sea. So I said, great, I want to be there. We're taking them out to the Turks and Caicos Islands, and we're going to gradually reintroduce them to the wild so that they learn to catch fish and everything. And I said, this is great. I said, is baby still alive? And they said, yeah. This is a dolphin that's never seen the sea.
Wow.
Never felt the sun on her back. Oh. Worked like a workhorse all her life for scraps of dead herring. Oh. So the day that they closed down the dolphinarium, they said, all right, you guys have won. You can come in and say goodbye to the dolphins. And this was huge for me because I felt as though I had been...
You felt guilty, didn't you?
Yeah, God, yeah. I felt guilty. It just shouldn't have been allowed. Yeah. And there I was, part of it. I used to lie awake planning, breaking in and carrying the dolphins across the Pebble Beach in Brighton and putting them in the English Channel and saying, you know, good luck.
Go.
They'd probably die, but, you know, at least you'll die in the sea. So I'm on my way in and there's six dolphins in the pool and I'm looking. That's not baby. That's not baby. No, that's not baby. So it must be. No, that's not baby. That's not baby. And the guy came up to me on the stage and he just went, there's baby. And I looked and it wasn't. Because what they used to do every time a dolphin died, rather than let the public know that dolphins were dying every 2 or 3 months inside the dolphinarium, is simply buy a new one, give it the name of the one who died. Nobody could tell the difference between the dolphins. They get a vet in who would always arrive a week later and say, death by natural causes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Enjoy the anarchic nightly on-air battle as Broadcast Protocol gets logged through the studio window. Suspend your disbelief.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. For those about to talk, we salute you.
So, hi, at home listening, or maybe you're podcasting and you're walking the dog. I don't know, but just for a moment, I'm talking to you, and just you. Which is obviously a fictional arrangement because you can't talk back. But suffice to say that thank you for listening, whether you're listening or podcasting. And I like you. I almost love you. And I owe you one. But I don't know how I can pay that back. Except possibly by making you feel a little bit better than you would do if you listened to something else, or nothing at all. And I don't know how I can do that, but I'm going to try. And I'm not going to say anything that's clearly false or crass, such as don't worry, everything's going to be all right. Because, like you, I worry if everything's going to be all right, and that's why I can't resist a ringing phone. My landline rings 2 or 3 times a day. It's always a cold call. But I still can't resist answering it, just in case it's going to be a big, deep voice at the other end that says, don't worry, everything's going to turn out all right. But what little I know is this. On the whole, good just about beats bad every time, and therefore, I think, and you must sort of put some stock in what I say, or else you're one of those listeners who listens because you're waiting for me to make a mistake. When I say, I do think that everything is just about going to turn out all right. What's our phone number again, Nikki?
It is 03444991000.
Now, I last did this job about 20 years ago, and I used to read books up and down on the train into the radio station, and I kept the books because sometimes I would write little things in the book where I was from the shows that I was doing. And occasionally you'd get a caller on who was really, really, really amazing, and you touched and they touched you, and I'd make a note of their number with their permission. And sometimes we'd call them back if it was quiet. Didn't happen very often. But I was going through my old books when I knew I was going to come.
You've still got them 20 years on.
Yeah, well, no, they're not. They're novels and things. And I write in the side margins and in the. And there was a caller called Sandra, who I gave 5 stars to. But I can't remember what on earth she was on about. But I found the book and I found Sandra's details. So a couple of days ago, I phoned her up and asked if she'd like to just have a chat again. And I think she's on line 7. Sandra?
Hi, Tommy.
It's you.
It's me. It's me.
This is incredible.
Nice to talk to you.
Brilliant.
20 years on.
20 years on.
I remembered what I spoke to you about.
What was it?
You were doing an hour called What's Wonderful.
Yeah.
And it was 1997, and I rang in to tell you what was wonderful in my life at that moment.
What was it?
And it was, after 4 years of trying to have a second child, I became pregnant.
Hey.
And I rang in and said that was wonderful, because we were ecstatic.
Of course you were. And has it turned out wonderful?
Yes, it has. It's turned out very wonderful. It's been quite an eventful 20 years, so looking back. Very, you know, second child, very, two special children I've got. Second one in particular, she had, developed a few problems when she was about 3 and a half, resulting in a heart condition. Later on, sort of when she was 12, collapsed at school, cardiac arrest, 3 cardiac arrests later, she ended up on life support, and she ended up having the one and only heart transplant at Birmingham Children's Hospital, performed by the doctors at Great Ormond Street. They drove up the motorway and basically saved her life.
Can you say her name?
Her name's Jasmine.
Jasmine.
She's 18, turned 19 next week, and she's training to be a teacher.
And how is she? The big question.
She's doing really well. She's doing really, really well. Obviously, she's on a lot of medication, and she has regular checkups. Still in London and in Birmingham, but she's just grasped, you know, life by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah,
and she's living her life to the full. It was a long sort of recovery, because it was sort of an emergency situation, so she had to learn to walk and, things that she can and can't do. But if you met her today, nobody would know. She just looks after herself and lives every day.
Great. This is quite a story, one which a cynical listener, and you get them, will think is somehow constructed or fictional, fake, or has been, you know, doctored. But you phoned The Wonderful Hour, which was a feature I did on Friday afternoons on Talk Radio, which was so popular because people wanted to feel good on a Friday afternoon. It's hugely popular. And I remembered your call, and I made a little note of you, and then I found the notebook, and then there you were. And you phoned about the fact that you were pregnant with Jasmine.
Yeah. We were so happy. As I said, 4 years of trying. We went down the IVF route, and luckily we were successful, and I gave birth to a healthy, happy little girl. And I have to say, despite health issues, etc., she's still a healthy, happy girl. She's
hell of a story. It's an amazing
life for the whole family.
Story.
Really.
I'm so pleased for Jasmine and for everybody who's going to have a better life for knowing Jasmine in one capacity or another. You think about the way that good sometimes just travels out like ripples. And it's all because you kept trying and you kept trying.
Yeah.
And now you've got this inspirational daughter. Well, you've got two, haven't you, actually? We mustn't forget the other one.
Her brother, he was 12 and a half, 13 when she was born. Obviously, you know, they're very close. And he's now a doctor, he's a registrar. At the time she first became ill, when she was 3 and a half, when she first got ill, I've got a brilliant little sister who was also a birthing partner for her. She was the first person to see her. And when sort of Jasmine took ill initially, when she was only 3 and a half, obviously the family at the hospital, and not great news. And my sister was just about to go on a TV show, and she was saying, well, she can't go now because her niece, her goddaughter, is seriously in hospital. And we said, no, you must go, because just seeing you on TV in these days, you had videotapes, none of all this sort of internet stuff. And you know, she ended up going on a TV show, and it helped lift Jasmine, and it was just something different than, you know, for the doctors and the nurses. She won't mind me mentioning that. That was Alison Hammond. That's my little sister, and she sort of has a close bond with Jasmine too.
Good God, Alison.
Yeah.
And she's made a career out of it, because she went into the Big Brother house,
that's
didn't
right.
she?
The week she was going into the house, Jasmine became ill. Jasmine was, you know, a healthy child, and she became ill. She contracted a disease called Kawasaki's disease. And she ended up at Birmingham Children's Hospital. This is what damaged her heart arteries in the sort of initial instance. And my sister, Alison, obviously was there at the hospital with me, and she was in a dilemma.
Gosh, she must have been, because she didn't know how many weeks she'd be going to that house for.
No. Fortunately, it was only 2 weeks, but, you know, it was a big dilemma. But we said, no, you must go. And the nurses used to sort of tape the show and bring it into the hospital.
That's a hell of a story.
I've got a couple of questions for you, Sandra.
So have I.
Okay, well, we'll hold on to Sandra for as long as we can. But it's 11 minutes past 11 if you're listening live. And we're here till 1 o'clock. It's Talk Radio. It's Tommy Boyd and Nikki Kegg-Shevlin. Ian's regular team are here with us. Sandra is a caller. Actually, we called Sandra because she was a caller to a talk radio station, which I suppose is this one now, 20 years ago. She phoned to say that she was pregnant with what became her first daughter, her second child.
Right. Yeah.
But that her child developed all sorts of problems. What age was she when she had her heart transplant?
She was 12 and a half when she had her heart transplant.
She was 12 and a half?
12 and a half. She collapsed at school.
I have to ask if that's rare or unique, or is that common?
It's rare. She had a rare condition, and it was such a surprise, even to the hospital. She said she was only at the hospital a few days before. And she was she had this heart condition, so she had medication, you know, in the school day as well. So she was in a lesson, and a teacher would come to the class, knock on the door, Jasmine would come out. He gave her the one pill, and she said, "Thank you, sir." And he was about to give her the other pill, and she literally collapsed in his arms. Yeah. Luckily, this teacher was, he used to train the other teachers in CPR. So three teachers who were trained actually kept her alive until the paramedics came.
Oh, goodness.
That's an incredible story.
Okay, one other question I need to ask you. Forgive me if I do ask this question. I feel nervous asking it, but I will.
Fine.
Do you know who the donor was?
I don't know I don't know the family. It's something that, you know, you can sort of contact the liaison people.
Yeah.
But I do know it was a 40-year-old lady that saved my 12-and-a-half-year-old daughter.
And you're forever grateful for that.
I'm forever grateful.
Great talking to you. Let's speak again in another 20 years. I'm not joking.
That would be great.
It will, wouldn't it?
That would be really interesting.
Well, listen, love to your husband. I know you said you were going to have to speak to him to try and remember what it was you phoned the wonderful hour about.
I remembered as soon as I put the phone down, because I thought, 1997, what was I doing? I said, I know.
Yeah.
Of course, I know what we were doing in 1997 and what I would have called you about, what was wonderful.
One last question. When did your eldest son decide to go into the medical profession?
That was what my question was going to be.
Well done.
That's interesting, actually. That was probably about the year Jasmine was born.
So?
Literally, he initially, at 8, he wanted to be a dentist, and then sort of in his early teens, he did sort of a MedLink thing. And he's decided to become a doctor.
So you can see what we're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he, you know, he's been brilliant. He's been a godsend, and of course, you know...
But did he decide to become a doctor? Did he decide to become a doctor because...
His little sister.
Of his little sister, think?
That will have kind of, you know, possibly influenced that decision as well.
Yeah, you should find out, because it's one example of how... I'm unlucky. I don't believe in God as depicted, but there's something.
Definitely.
And the fact that both your children are going to go on and do a great deal of good is wonderful, but the fact that your eldest son might do a great deal of good in the medical world,
absolutely,
because he learned at an early age how important medical people are, is just one example of how if only there was the God that the Bible talks about, he works in mysterious ways. Talk to you in 20... No, ring me another time, Sandra. Lots of love.
I will do.
Off you
Thank
go.
You.
Thank you. Bye. So that does happen.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it doesn't. My mum lost a daughter. But before my sister died, my mum used to have to take her to this special school for physiotherapy and various things. And when my sister died, they offered my mum a little job at the school. And she stayed. And she became a teacher there. And then she became like head of department. And then she became head teacher. And she worked at this school for 30 years. And she helped a massive number of children with various disabilities.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't have happened if she hadn't been, we all hadn't been exposed to the illness of my sister.
I always say good comes out of bad. There's always something good that comes out of something bad. So if you're going through a bad time at the moment, remember that, because something is going to happen and it's going to be good for you.
True enough. Where are we off to now? Remind us of the phone number and then we'll talk to Vicky.
Yeah, if you want to give us a call, we would love to hear from you. And the number to call is 0344 499 1000.
Vicky's calling from, mysteriously, the London area.
From Croydon, actually.
Oh, I came through Croydon about 4 hours ago. It was teeming.
Oh, you poor thing.
No, Croydon's all right. Don't you like Croydon?
Bits of it are okay.
I was walking through Croydon High Street. What was the big department store in Croydon that's gone now?
Alders.
That's the one. Yeah. I was walking past there, and there was so much concrete, Vicky. Everything was concrete. To the left of them, to the right of you, below me. It was concrete, concrete, concrete. And there, in the middle, sandwiched between two flagstones, was a single blade of grass growing. And I looked at it and yeah, my man!
I hope you left it there.
I felt like picking it and taking it home and putting it in a flower pot and growing it. But, you know, Nature finds a way, as well as everything else.
It's all glass now, though.
All glass, yeah.
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 Yeah, they're transforming it at the moment into glass rather than concrete. So
I read a piece in one of the magazines not long ago about people doing stupid things by accident. And there's a glass tower in a Canadian city, and it's all glass. And a young executive was holding a meeting there, and one of the people at the meeting was very nervous about getting too close to this floor-to-ceiling glass.
Yeah.
So he said, "You don't have to worry. It's really strong. I'll show you how strong it is."
Oh, no.
So he went to the back of the room. You know what's coming here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he threw himself at the glass to demonstrate with his shoulder how strong it was.
No.
And it wasn't that strong.
What floor were he on?
Oh, something like the 137th.
Oh, God. That's kind of like jumping off the bridge when you're looking over it, isn't it? You know that thing you were saying about earlier on, where you get the urge to jump out of a hot air balloon or whatever? Oh, God. That's awful.
Wouldn't happen in Croydon, though. They're all too sensible.
I don't know, you know. I think it would. Croydon has good elements, but it also has its bad elements. And I think that blade of grass has actually gone.
Oh, it's gone now.
I think so, yeah.
I was talking to somebody about local radio during the week, and I was reminded that I did my first work in radio at a tiny radio station called Radio Brighton. And it was so small that I remember this news bulletin going out at 10 to 7 one Wednesday evening during a programme for the blind, as people were called then. And they said, "We have this important information for our blind listeners. There is a cracked paving stone outside Woolworths in the Western Road." And I thought, yeah, that's what radio should be like. It should be about the road I live in and the road in and the road behind and the parade of shops that I use and the park.
Wouldn't it be good if there was a radio station for each road?
Well, yes, and we could do it nowadays.
Yeah, but don't you think it'd be a bit tedious just for the one road?
Depends who's on, miss.
Well, like for your local area, maybe. You know, like for your immediate area, within 10 minutes walk of your house.
You see, I don't like it when on the television breakfast shows, they go, and now it's time for the news where you are.
Yes.
And it never is.
No.
I live on the South Coast, and I have to find out what they're doing in bloody Oxford. Nothing against Oxford, but it's not where I live.
I mean, Croydon, you get told what's going on up in Boreham Wood.
It's all wrong, isn't it?
Miles away.
Aren't broadcasting organisations stupid?
They can be.
I was watching the ITV debate of the leaders last night. And I like Mary Nightingale on all sorts of levels. But she was interrupting almost every single speaker as they were clearly getting to the end of their answer. And all she had to do was put her finger up and say, make this your last sentence, and they would have shut up. But she didn't. She couldn't somehow resist talking over them as they were finishing their last sentence. And once you've noticed that that's happening...
It's really annoying, isn't it?
I get very irritated watching some television programmes. Who doesn't?
Well,
don't get me started on Rick Stein.
Oh. Actually,
go on, Vicky.
I was actually on one of the debate programmes for the Brexit. You know, for like when they had... like all of the leaders going up and having a chat with people and stuff. And I was on one with David Cameron. And I actually asked David Cameron a question. And Kay Burley, I asked the question, and the question had more than one facet to it. And Kay Burley interrupted the crucial moment that would have absolutely floored David Cameron. And it drove me up the wall.
Yes.
So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yes.
And you've never forgiven Kay Burley, have you?
I've never forgiven Kay Burley.
And I don't blame you.
No.
I like Kay Burley, actually. I don't know why, because she's very irritating.
I'm not a fan. And
I ought to be irritated by Kay Burley, but I'm not.
I can't put my finger on what it is, but I don't like her.
I'll tell you why.
She kind of pushes people out of the way. That's what the problem is.
She's done very well for herself.
Journalism.
We go back a long way. She worked at TVAM when I was there, when she was fresh out of college. And this is what happened. TVAM had a strike. They were getting at the engineers' union. And the journalists had to decide whether they were going with the management or whether they were going with the strikers. And the management found out that Kay Burley was the journalist who was most in favour of the workers. And the reason they found out, I'm told, was because they bugged the room that the journalists used to have their meetings about where they were going to stand. But the management at TVAM was actually also very broad-minded, and they quite liked the strikers too. So they didn't just forgive Kay Burley. This is the story I heard. They didn't just forgive Kay Burley for ranting against them. They actually gave her a better job.
Promoted her.
Well, they were Aussies, and Aussies tend to go with, you know, people of convictions and strength. I've never met an Aussie I didn't like. You know, they're forthright. They're friendly and they're bloody thirsty.
I was going to say they're great drinkers.
Bloody thirsty.
They are good drinkers.
So that all turned out very well.
Yeah.
Well, what was the point you were going to murder David Cameron with, Vicky, quickly? Because I've got a cue.
It was about nursing bursaries, because he told my daughter to go and get go on an apprenticeship, when in actual fact she wanted to be paediatric nurse. And he said, oh, well, you know, she needs to get a better education. Send her out and do some education or whatever. And then I confronted him with the fact that he had taken away bursary for nurses.
Nice one.
And she stopped me.
Oh,
great talking to you, Vicky. Thank you for your call. Really appreciate it. It's 11:23, actually.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
We'll get you talking.
I remember when Talk Radio started in this country, the commercial version of it. And at the time, each of the shows were asked to write out about three sides. Remember sides when they had paper?
Yes.
On what the show was going to be. And I took inspiration from... There was a comedy writer, I think his name was Dennis Norden, something like that. And he came up with an idea at the BBC where this comedian called Jimmy Edwards was going to be a school teacher. And he got told, go away, he said, and write the whole thing up as you see it. And he came back with a piece of paper, and on it was written, Jimmy Edwards as a school teacher with hilarious results.
Great.
And he got a series, right? And I did the same thing at Talk Radio. I just wrote something along the lines of, I talk to interesting callers.
And that's what it's about. I don't like it when it's all contrived and pre-arranged what you're going to talk about. Because you never know what route the conversation's going to go down. And that's what's brilliant about talk radio, isn't it?
Let's go to Cleo, who's online something or other. Hello, Cleo.
Hello, Mr. Boyd.
Hello, Cleo.
Well, it's Lane, but it's like Cleo because they've nicknamed us Cleo because of Cleo Lane, obviously. Anyway, do you know when you have a reunion with schoolmates?
I've heard it happens, yes.
Well, obviously, you're like, I've never gone, but they've been organised. When you see one of them and you think, well, good job I haven't seen you for the last 20 years. Well, I don't feel that with you tonight. It's like you've sort of stepped off the plane as you got on years ago and flew away. So it's been marvellous so far, this little jaunt of yours tonight.
You're very kind. That's a very evocative image, stepping off a plane, I have to say.
That's a lovely analogy.
Because I like stepping off a plane where you go down some stairs onto the tarmac.
The old ones.
Yes, I do not like stepping off a plane into...
A tunnel. No.
I flew back from Bangkok to Heathrow once, and we stopped off in Dubai. And they opened the doors, I have no idea why, and a fly got in. And this fly flew with us, annoying everybody, all the way to Heathrow. And I've always wondered what he'd said to his wife. I'm just popping out to get some shit. Or something. And he never comes back. But because the fly's powers of understanding are what they are, he gets into a thing in Dubai, and then 6 hours later, he gets out in Dubai. But he doesn't.
Exactly.
He's in Isleworth.
Yeah. Probably notice a difference in the temperature.
And so many differences between
temperature
Dubai.
Might be the first thing, yeah?
Yeah.
Technically the fastest fly ever.
Well, there is that, isn't there? You know, when we're flying, we don't feel as though we're doing 600 miles an hour, do we?
So you had a 600 mile an hour fly in your...
Have you noticed that there's only ever one fly in your house? I've never had two, and I've never had none. There's always one.
You've got to have a period when you don't have a fly in your house, surely.
Oh, she's there.
Really?
How often do you manage to chase a fly stroke bee out of your window by shouting at it?
What do you shout?
Get out!
Shall I tell you probably the most lunatic thing I've ever done? I was in bed... I was in bed with the flu and I had a temperature.
Fly, flu.
And there was a fly in the bedroom.
Right.
And there was something familiar about the fly. The fly seemed to want to come to me. And I was laying there, sort of tossing and turning, sweating.
Aye, aye.
And my grandfather had passed away only a few months earlier. And I'd heard stories about people either coming back as another human being or coming back as a creature. Mm. So do you know what I said to the fly?
Hello, Grandad.
I said, yeah.
Did you?
I said, do that.
I said, I honestly said, if your granddad come and land on my arm.
And don't tell me.
No, it didn't. Oh, look, what would have happened if it had have done? Because you've seen the film The Fly,
yes.
Haven't you?
Help me! Help me!
What?
Another great, and I know you like going forward, not necessarily going back, but another great, wonderful hour. Mm. Episode where there was a guy with his kid, and his dad had just died.
Oh, Cleo, kid, no, don't do this one because I'll cry.
The heron, and he said,
"Oh, no,
is that granddad?"
I can't handle it, mate.
Oh, you've started now, so we need to know, don't we?
Oh, shall I do it, Cleo? Because you've done it. Oh dear, and I can't.
It was mint.
We used to do this thing on the old talk radio called The Wonderful Hour, and Cleo's mentioned one of my two favourite stories that people rang in with. It was this chap who said, I can't do it without crying.
Well, I
He said,
it.
Yeah, go on then, you do it.
There was a guy who rang up. It might have been just a couple of weeks after his dad had died.
Yeah.
And he said he'd been depressed and the family were all distraught and blah, blah, blah. And he took his boy out for a walk and they went by the nearest pond. And the heron took off, and herons look like angels, and they've got big wings, and flew off. And he said the wonderful thing was, his son said, I'm nearly crying, actually. He said, his son said, is that Grandad?
Is that Grandad flying up to heaven?
And then he said, probably yes.
Well, what would you say?
That's beautiful, though, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it?
I was telling the others about my other... That is beautiful, and it does make me cry. I was telling the others before the show started this evening about A Wonderful Hour, because a couple of people who are working on the show remember it. And in fact, my friend should come in and just tell us... Oh, God, a name. I've forgotten a name now. There's only three people's names I have to remember, and I've forgotten a name. Hayley, that's it. Just stay with me, Claire, for a second, will you? Because this Wonderful Hour thing obviously affected quite a lot of people. Hayley, just pull up a thing here. It was you who said to me that you always remembered the Wonderful Hour.
Yes, on a Friday afternoon.
And what did you used to do?
I used to hide in the toilets at school and listen to you.
This is unbelievable. I know. Really. I never knew that doing radio, that something was affecting. It wasn't me, it was the callers.
Well, yeah, but you were... You attracted it.
What was it called? I was an activator or something. I don't know. But
I reckon that Hayley might have ended up in radio because of you.
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
There you go.
God, I hope you get out of it alive.
Oh, well, I hope so too.
No, so I was telling Hayley and Kath and Ed that Cleo, this is the one that I think is up there with the Is That Grandad Flying Up to Heaven?
Right.
A truck driver phoned in and he said, I've got to be quick, Tommy, because I'm cracking up. I pulled over to buy a packet of fags in a little supermarket, and the little old lady in front of me in the queue, she dropped her money, and it rolled everywhere. And she said, oh, dear, that's got to last me until Thursday. So everybody went down on their hands and knees, and she said, I know how much it was. It was £3.15. And everybody collected up the money and they put it in her hand, Tommy, and it was 37 quid. He said to me, he just went, oh, people, wonderful. I've got to go now. I'm cracking up. And it was wonderful. And then I'm going home on the train and I've got my can of Foster's, like you do, and I'm thinking, maybe... Just maybe, this little old lady pulls this stunt in corner shops.
You cynical
up
man.
Up and down the country.
You cynical.
You don't know. Don't know, do you?
Do you? Trust you to think that.
Well, you've got to think about
it. I was
everything.
Just thinking, what a lovely story. You just spoiled it.
No, I don't mean to do that. Thank you, Hayley. Very much indeed. And thank you, Cleo, as well. That was sweet of you, and thanks for the memory.
Me bother, dude. Love you, man. See you later.
Talk to you again. Our number
is... 03444991000.
Sarah's online, I think it's something like 12, and she's got a dilemma, I understand. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Tommy. How are you?
Surprisingly well is how I answer that question these days.
I'm a bit nervous.
How are you?
I'm all right, I'm just a bit nervous.
Okay, well, it usually takes about a minute and a half for that to go, so let's talk about something else until it does.
Okay.
What are you doing tomorrow? Oh no, I sound like a Waitrose checkout person. They've been told, Waitrose, the checkout people, to ask people things like, "What are your plans for the rest of the day?"
I'd say, "What's it got to do with you?"
Are you feeling a little bit better yet, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm fine now. Thanks for that.
So the information, all the information I have about your call is that you have a dilemma.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to see that Kath misspells dilemma in the same way I do. I always put an N in there, Kath, and there isn't one. No, I had to look it up. There's no M. There's no N in dilemma. Have you put an N in it? Oh.
An M.
Then what's wrong is not your spelling of dilemma, but my glasses.
Your eyesight.
Yeah. Sorry, Kath.
What is the dilemma?
Yes.
So, I'm intrigued.
So basically 2 years ago, I moved I came back from Japan through family circumstances. And then I moved into this, I was, looking for a spare room somewhere. And one came up in this house in an area that I'd spent most of my adult life in. So I thought, great. And I went to the house and I met the landlady, and she was she was living there. And she seemed quite, she was a bit of a character, and I thought, okay, she seemed a little bit like different. But I thought, you know what, I like her. So I moved in, and then things were fine for a while. And I kept myself to myself generally. And then I got a boyfriend about 7 months into living there. And since that, we're still together. It's been like a year or so now. But she didn't really like the fact that he'd come round like once every 2 weeks just to stay overnight. So we had a talk, and we arranged that my boyfriend could stay over, you know, once in a while and stuff. But then other things started to happen, like, you know, little bits like using the washing machine at certain times and stuff like that. But I kind of let things go because I was quite comfortable in that house. And then more things started to happen, like more rules were set in place and stuff. And for some reason, she basically started asking me every time my boyfriend came over, which was like once every like couple of weeks, asking me to tell her exactly which rooms we were in the house and things like that. And I just kind of thought, oh, well, you know what, maybe she's just a bit like OCD. Maybe she needs to kind of, she panics a bit. I kind of like was quite, felt quite forgiving. So I'd text her and I'd say, Lee's coming over and we're going to go to the kitchen. I'm going to make a cup of tea and then we're going to go straight to my room. And she'd say, oh, thank you, and things like that. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was cooking in the kitchen and she basically was like, I don't want you to cook in the kitchen in the week. I'd rather you just make quick meals in the week. And I just felt quite controlled. Anyway, in the end, I asked her if she was okay and what was on her mind and stuff. And then she said that she found that I was too comfortable in the house and I was too... I'm sorry. I'm hearing snoring.
I'm just having 5 minutes. Is that all right? I know you're going to get to the nub of this one at some point, but on my first show back after 10 years, I don't like to tell anybody to get on with it.
Okay, so...
Get on with it.
All right. So then she said that I was too comfortable in the house and she just didn't really... She felt like...
Can you do this in a nutshell?
Yeah, so...
And I'll tell you what to do.
So anyway, in the end, after her shouting at me, calling me selfish and inconsiderate of everyone else in the house, I just basically said, to salvage any friendship, I'll move out. And I felt a bit like... So I moved out, and then now she wants to meet me for a cup of tea, and I feel a bit uncomfortable.
So is this the dilemma then? Whether or not to go for a cup of tea?
Yeah.
This is the dilemma.
Wow.
Basically, yeah, because
do you still like the woman as a person?
Do you know what? Like, I care about her.
But do you like her?
No.
Well, there's your answer.
I care about her.
Go for a cup of tea with her. Do something extravagant with her. Go pony riding or something. Do anything.
Go and get drunk.
Do it.
Just go and get drunk together.
Just do it.
And then she might be so OCD.
Do it. Do lots of things that you've never dreamed of doing before. Cut down that clematis that's clinging to the side of the garage. It's poisonous. Paint your door orange. Open the window tonight and shout, I'm mad as hell and I don't care anymore.
Do you think I should paint her door orange?
What? Do what? The door?
Do you think I should paint her door orange?
Oh, paint her orange.
Yeah, all right then.
The first phone-in I ever did was on LBC. I was a kid. I was 22. It was a 15-minute programme. 15 minutes. 15 yeah. minutes. And a woman rang up. No, it was a man. No, a woman. She rang up and she said, I want them to bring back hanging for murderers.
Oh, no.
So I said, and what would you do to shoplifters? And there was a second silence and she went, paint them green!
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
One thing that we were going to do this evening is Nikki has prepared a list of prominent people, and we're going to go through them very quickly, one by one. Good game, you can play at home and decide how irritating the people are. Because, for example, I find Rick Stein really irritating. I used to like him. He's a nice guy, clearly a nice guy, very competent chef, entrepreneur, good broadcaster, but I find him irritating.
What irritates you about him?
Well, the fact that he always goes off into a diatribe about the fact that we in Britain don't eat the kind of fish that he catches off the Cornish coast. It all goes to France and Spain, where they appreciate these things. And three quarters of the way through every one of his programmes, he starts going in that Cornish accent. Why, oh, why can't we cook fish like this in our country? Why, oh, why does it have to go to the Gauls and to the Basques? Well, I'll tell you why, Rick, because the little flubbers that you're talking about are 3 inches long. They look like something out of Harry Potter, and there's no flesh on them whatsoever. There's no way of cooking them except to chuck them in a bouillabaisse, and we prefer cod. And there it is, Rick, so let it lie.
Get over it.
Who else you got on the list?
Keith Lemon. You see, I can't bear Keith Lemon.
That's very fair.
Every time he comes on the television, I literally have to turn the television over. I know loads of people think he's amazing and funny. I don't get him. I don't get him.
I think being irritating is part of his act.
I know that, but I just don't get it.
Well, in that case, he's doing it rather well.
I know.
Yeah. Who else?
Pippa Middleton, who's getting married tomorrow.
No, I don't find her irritating. What's irritating about her?
The fact that she overshadowed her own sister at her wedding.
That's not irritating.
Well, it isn't to a man, because everybody was looking at her backside. But I just...
I like backsides, but I didn't bother with hers.
Don't you think, though, that that day it all came about her, and then she's jumped on her sister's bandwagon? I mean, before that, Pippa Middleton, who was she?
Nobody, I agree with you. Exactly. Still is nobody, and, as far as
yeah,
I'm
but
concerned.
Then it's... You see her at Wimbledon in the royal irritating. Box and everything. No, that is irritating. Why does she get in the royal box and
Keith
I don't?
Keith Chegwin's irritating.
No.
Pippa Middleton's not irritating, mate. Really?
I think you fancy her. That's probably why.
No, I don't. I honestly don't. No. I just find her a bit of a drink of water, making her way. She doesn't impose herself in the way that... I would let Keith Chegwin lie if he hadn't gone all Brexit on us.
I was all right with Keith Chegwin until he did that Naked show.
Oh, I don't even want to begin to go there, so let's go somewhere else straight away. I think I know what you're talking about. Because if I think of Keith Chegwin naked, I have to think of him making love to Maggie Philbin.
Oh, my... Really?
That's how the mind works. You can't control your mind. Yes, he and Maggie Philbin were an item, weren't they?
I thought they were brother and sister.
Whoa!
No!
Whoa! Whoa! Radio Alabama! Jeez! Get your banjo out, girl. Flap those ears off into the sunset. No, they're not brother and sister.
No, no, no. But in my mind, I suddenly thought, weren't they brother and sister when you said that? And I was thinking, no, that's really getting awkward.
Who else have you got on your list?
Piers Morgan. Now, you see, he is Marmite. I love him.
People using the Marmite expression are irritating.
Oh!
Because most of us, Marmite, yeah, all right. Sometimes.
No, people either love it or hate it.
The PR people have got you. They've got you because they've got you mentioning Marmite under any circumstances. We don't have to say that other yeast spreads are available.
So, are you saying you are indifferent to Marmite?
Don't care. That's 85%
rubbish.
Of the population don't give a hoot about Marmite one way or the other. It's all right. If you don't fancy peanut butter and jam, what else is there? So it's just another spread.
Disagree. No. Anyway, back to Piers Morgan. I love Piers Morgan because he says it as it is.
Yeah.
I just think brilliant. You?
We all enjoy watching him rubbing Susanna Reid up the wrong
way. Oh, that's the best bit.
I know.
Isn't it?
And they know it and they're working on
it. But she has warmed to him. That's interesting. And it's got a bit boring because I loved it for the first few months and you could see her bristling.
Yeah.
Just bristling.
Yeah.
Andy Murray.
that's spooky, because I started my list and didn't tell you, and Andy Murray was the first one I put on it. Is he irritating or not?
I just wish he'd smile a bit more. He's a very good tennis player, but yes, he is irritating.
He is irritating. I like it when he's not playing very well and he does that trudge across the along the baseline. Mm. He's just lost a point and he's got to go to the other service court to take to receive serve. And he does that trudge. He hunches his shoulders and that enormous mouth. Has anybody talked at any great length about Andy, the size of Andy Murray's mouth?
I've never really thought about
that. He elongates it like Alien. And it's, you know, it's a physical, it's not a defect, but it's a remarkable ability. I bet he, like Matt Copper, who was taken to hospital during the Orgreave riots, I bet he could get a whole orange in his mouth.
Oh, easily. Easily.
This Copper put an orange in his mouth. That's how bored they were during the coal miners' strike. Put an orange in his mouth and then couldn't get it out. And they had to take him to hospital to cut it.
Why didn't they just cut the orange?
That's what I thought. Why didn't they just get a knife?
Yeah, and cut the orange.
It's like a slice.
Well, that's
out
ridiculous.
Of it. I know.
Saying about irritating people, we were talking about tennis with Andy Murray. Rafa Nadal, I love him, but he takes 20 seconds between points doing all his twitching and touching and lucky
bits.
Can you
do the whole thing?
I can.
Go on then. So it's bouncy, 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 bouncy,
bouncy. Bouncy. Touch headband.
Is it touch headband first?
I think it's touch headband first.
Yeah.
Socks.
Socks.
Back to headband, bouncy, bouncy.
Yeah.
I've run out now.
Okay, the bit that really annoys me is when he just takes hold of the, he takes hold of the back of his crutch.
Yeah.
And just eases it away from his bottom.
Mm. I actually quite enjoy that.
You don't want to... Oh, do you? Is that Rafael from the bottom?
That's no problem. It's probably his bottom for me and Pippa Middleton's bottom for you. I don't know.
I'll tell you an interesting one. Have you seen the new British star Johanna Konta?
Mm-hmm.
She does something really weird when she's serving. Watch this. Somebody should talk to her about it. All these tennis pros, they don't focus on the things that we notice at home.
Yeah.
She starts bouncing the ball and her racket is down by her leg, right?
Mm-hmm.
You watch. She spins it. She's not looking at it. She spins a hanging racket, doesn't look at it again to see which way it's facing or anything. She then throws the ball up and serves.
I've never noticed that. That's going to bug me
now. It's a circus trick of immense proportions. And it may explain why she went out in the second round of the Madrid Open. But anyway... I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a breath pause and then who's next on your are they irritating or not list?
Lorraine Kelly.
Okay, I thought we were going to have a commercial break there.
So
I'm going to advertise something because I've got a free opportunity to advertise. What shall I advertise? What have I got for sale? I haven't got anything for sale.
I've got a headboard.
That conversation could go in so many directions, couldn't it?
Should we move on?
Are there any notches on it?
No, it is brand new, this one.
You're saying a brand new headboard?
Yes.
What happened there?
I bought a bed and I didn't like the headboard, so the headboard can go.
What's wrong with the headboard?
Nothing, just doesn't go with the bedroom.
The headboard doesn't go with the bedroom?
No. It's a long story, not very interesting.
We've got a dishwasher in our kitchen... That looks like it was made in East Germany in 1957.
Yeah.
It's hideous.
Yeah.
Truly one of the most ugly looking dishwashers you could imagine. We bought it because it's red. It has to be red because the fridge is red.
Exactly.
The fridge has to be red because the kettle was red.
Exactly. It's a woman thing.
Lorraine Kelly is definitely not irritating.
I don't think so. But my husband cannot stand her. And I say, why? And he says, it's just the way she goes, it's great. Everything's great. And that really winds him up. But I love Lorraine Kelly. She can do no wrong in my eyes.
I first met Lorraine Kelly in a snooker room above a pub in Gourock, Scotland, when she was about 16, standing there, I think with a pint and a fag on, or maybe I've made that bit up. And we had a laugh about something, and I thought to myself, she'll do well. I didn't think she'd do as well as she did.
I could imagine going out for a good drink with her, having a great night.
She's a great bloke.
Mm.
I'm going to talk to One Call Paul, who's our next caller on Talk Radio. Hello, One Call.
Hi, honoured to speak to you, can I say?
Okay.
Can I say yes? I might be just as annoying my calls every night as Greg Bloody Wallace or David Dickinson.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because I usually call every night to Ian.
Right.
And people might find me annoying. And I might be... You were talking about annoying people on telly.
Are you annoying?
I don't think I am. I think I speak the truth.
Well, everybody does.
Okay. Anyway.
I'll tell you if you get annoying. Shall I tell you if you get annoying?
Yeah, you tell me if I get annoying.
I'll tell you what, you've been a bit annoying so far.
Okay, I'll go from the sublime to ridiculous. First of all...
That wasn't sublime? You think that was sublime?
I'm going to say now.
This show's been sublime up till now, 11:55.
Yes. Okay, can I say right? You know we had the sad loss of Chris Cornell this week?
Yeah.
Okay, you like playing some music occasionally on your shows, don't you?
I haven't done any radio for 20 years, so I don't know what
you're... No, but you used to play music. Okay, well, even if you listen to yourself, can I introduce you, and maybe if you could look it up, play Chris Cornell's version of Imagine. Yes, not many people should cover it, but he does a great version of it live, and it's on his album called Songbook. I think it should be heard by many people.
Understood, One Call. Thank you for that. I'm going to podcast this show myself, and I shall be listening to
this. Can I finish by saying...
No, you're gone. Bye. I'm going to podcast the show. I sometimes listen back. I don't like to.
No, I don't.
But I'll probably fast forward around about 5 to 12. But anyway, thanks, One Call. Let's squeeze Mick in before we find out what's happening in the world today, which I think is not a lot. Mick, if it's a fantastic call, we'll run it over into the next hour. How are you?
Tommy. Hello, matey. I'm in Worcester now, but I originally come from Brighton. And you're going to settle an argument. Did you ever teach at Felma High School?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you did.
My nickname was Biggles.
And you ran into me when I was a guard on the railway as well. And I used to ring up your shows when there were quizzes.
Yeah.
And you probably know my brother, my sister, who also live in Brighton. My brother, he ended up working at a stable yard up in Brighton. And when you were mentioning earlier Radio Brighton, and I was on a show called Cabbages and Kings.
Yep.
Yeah? Irritating people. Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he's a bit irritating, I suppose. Oh,
terrible.
If it's the real Paul McCartney.
The guy that still thinks he's in the Beatles, and the Beatles are still going, and
The Beatles weren't bad, mate, be fair.
But I mean, I met him in 75 at an Elton John concert. And out of all the people that were there, there was Steve Harley, Lindsay DePaul, and some other stars. And he just turned around and said, no, I won't give you my autograph. And that was it, you know.
All right, Mick, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for your call and for all the... what a motley of memories there. He's a good caller, though, Mick, because that could have taken him 2 hours. And he did it in 10 seconds.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Enjoy the anarchic nightly on-air battle as broadcast protocol gets logged through the studio window. Suspend your disbelief.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. For those about to talk, we salute you.
It's just after midnight, and it's Tommy here with Nikki and the team, and it's the time when I think things get really one-on-one, and so I sort of relax a little bit, as you can hear. Switch to decaf. And because you don't have to work quite so hard, because everybody's chilling out. I picture people at home with a glass of wine.
So do I.
Not their first. I picture people driving, perhaps listening on their own. We've got a hire car at the moment. It's got an automatic digital radio in it, so you don't have to go hunting for your digital stations. So, if you're driving and listening...
Or snuggle up in bed, listening.
Yeah, we worked on a show, didn't we, where that happened?
Yeah.
A woman caller came on. This was on a radio station down on the south coast. A woman caller came on, and she... Something about her voice, I could tell there was something going on. And she mentioned her boyfriend, and I said, could I have a word with your boyfriend? And without a pause, this voice just came in and went, hello. And then I could tell from their rhythmic speech... or arrhythmic speech, what was going on.
I remember that so clearly.
And they were conjoined.
I think they were.
And one idea that I've put upstairs before but had knocked back is that in the last hour of the 10 to 1 show, wherever you're doing it, people are only allowed to call in if they're actually, you know,
doing the do.
Making the, what's that phrase, making the somethings back?
I don't know that one.
Making, there's so many phrases, aren't there?
Yeah.
For, you know, F, asterisk, asterisk, ing. Did I say that? That's gone, is it? No, probably should have done. No, well, they write it down in newspapers. I don't know. I'm just testing, pushing the envelope a little bit here. Two-backed beast. Thank you. Who's that, Kath? I thought you dumped me then when I said F asterisk asterisk. The two-backed beast, yes.
I've never heard that term. Never.
It's like you're one beast, but you've got two backs.
Hmm.
And that's what they were doing. And I think that it might be an interesting format if people were to be making love, because it's a lovely intimate thing, isn't it?
So why would you need to be ringing up a radio station?
So that you can go into work on the Monday and say, I was on the radio.
Did you hear us? Were we good?
Doing what I do, you know, I guess. Because I think that one of the things about phone-in radio is that everybody who phones in and goes to air tells everybody they know, and then they tell other people that they know, and, it's a sort of self-publicising thing. If the radio station's prepared to do it for about 5 years, then almost everybody knows somebody who's been on the radio station or says they have. So, you know, there's that aspect to it. Let's take a few calls, shall we? In the spirit of the last hour of the programme, nice and relaxed and things. This is James.
Hello, Tommy.
Hello, James.
Long time no speak and long time no hear. You might not know who I am, but you did a programme in my mum and dad's house for Magpie. Do you remember that? In 1977, it was.
Tell me a bit more.
1977, Brittle Bones Appeal.
Oh.
It was in Harlow. And you and the crew, you took us all out for dinner at the yes. Green Man, I think, in yes. Old Harlow, and we had a great time.
Yes, I do remember.
You do remember that?
I do remember that.
What
I want to ask you is who
I always enjoyed your show.
Thank you. I have to ask you, who was it in your home then? Who was carrying Brittle Bones?
Me.
My man.
I'm the little boy that was there. So.
Oh, my man.
And how old are you now, James?
I'm 53 now.
Oh,
and you're doing all right by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I know that there's about 10 years between us, Tommy. There's about 10 years between us, and I know your birthday because it's the day before my mother's.
I'm glad you've made it, James, because I have to tell you that not everybody, not all the children that we featured on that particular charity appeal.
I know, Scott died, didn't he?
Yeah, made it to adulthood. And
Scott was a very good friend of mine, actually.
I carried a photograph of one of the young girls who... What's the medical term again for brittle bones?
Osteogenesis imperfecta.
Osteogenesis imperfecta, thank you.
Yeah.
And it's a little tiny Polaroid photograph of her being cradled by her father.
Mm.
And she's looking at me as people looked at people on television in those days.
Yeah.
I don't think television is quite the thing that it was then. And I think it gave her a fleeting feeling of being special. The special was that she was a child who was carrying a life-threatening illness, which may indeed have... I think she died shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
Anyway... You didn't.
On a happier note.
Well, no, you being alive is pretty happy.
Yeah, I have a pretty good life. I'm a broadcaster myself these days. I do radio production and
where?
Got my own media business, so I do all that stuff.
Okay, where do you do your radio production?
I do it all from home.
Right,
yeah, and I do work for other radio stations as well.
I see.
I'm working, I've got a show in America. And I've got a show in Great Yarmouth at the moment.
Well, you certainly cover a wider spectrum of the radio listening public than I do. From Yarmouth to the United States of America. Here's James. Yeah. Cute. Well, you say long time no speak. That really is long time no speak. And I'm,
it is, isn't it?
Thank you.
I think, it's 40 years, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
It's 40 years this year.
Thank you, mate. Thank you very much indeed for your call.
That was in November.
Mm. Thank you. James, that's nice.
Very nice. I remember Magpie and doing that Christmas appeal. I remember that so clearly.
Do you?
I remember sending my pocket money in.
Did you?
Mm.
Jack D does a routine about that. He goes, Blue Peter. I can't do Jack D. Blue Peter asked you to send in milk bottle tops.
Yeah.
Magpie asked you for money. And they got millions of pounds. And then that Mick Robertson just disappeared.
Great line. Oh, I love that.
Where are we off to now? A man posing as... We had a caller on earlier whose name was Sarah, who said that she had a dilemma. And her dilemma, we eventually almost discovered, was whether or not to go for a cup of tea with the landlady who was being somewhat sniffy about the relationship she was having with a boy. I'm just looking around into people's eyes here at Talk Radio to make sure I've kind of got that right.
Yes, that was spot on.
And here now is a man.
And a lot quicker than she said told the story.
Just, with words, it is as with the sun's rays. The more concentrated they are, the deeper they burn. Let's go to a man posing as dull Sarah's landlady. Hello, man.
Hello. No, I am actually a woman, Tommy.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, sorry, if you're listening, I will go for that cup of tea with you. But there's just one thing. Before you do, right, you said you moved out and everything, you moved all your stuff out. But I found a biscuit tin, an empty biscuit tin, on the worktop. Sarah, if you're listening,
we're listening.
Could you come and collect it?
Oh, Sarah, if you're listening.
Oh, Sarah's listening, right?
Yeah, you want Sarah to come and collect the biscuits in? Okay.
Yeah, collect the biscuits in because it's in the way.
I think you're both very suited for each other. You'll make a very happy couple, but your children will be at best loquacious. You can spell it. Thank you for your call. I don't know what loquacious means. Do you?
I'd like to be able to spell it.
Hello. Doesn't matter. You have a list of people and we have to decide which of them are irritating, or, and if so, how irritating.
Okay.
Who have you got next?
The voiceover woman on MasterChef.
Oh, sorry.
Because she talks like this.
Really?
Everything she says is, I got the lemon sorbet out of the fridge and sprinkled chocolate over it. And you think, does she say at home, your tea's ready? Or could you put the washing out? Nobody speaks like that.
Oh, well, we men wish they did.
No, it's not sexy.
It bloody is.
No, well, I'm sorry, mate. The way she does it.
It works for me.
Well, maybe I did it. Maybe Ed. I did it on a sexy version of it.
The authority in it worked for Kath. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Hayley, I'm not sure. Did that do anything for you?
Oh, it drives me mad, this woman.
Yeah, I know. Voiceovers on television generally drive me mad. And I've often said that we should have a day, you know, like we have Bruce Forsyth Day. Well, we don't, but we should.
Oh, well, that's another person on my list.
No, but we should have a Bruce Forsyth Day because this man's not going to be here forever. And he's given us more pleasure than anybody else. And it's been good family fun. And everybody can do Bruce. And for the whole of the morning of Bruce Forsyth Day, doesn't matter who you are, what you do, Prime Minister, bank manager, you should do Bruce. You should be Bruce all morning long. Right, my love. Oh,
do the poses. Yeah.
Yeah. Give us a twirl. Lovely. Miss Anthea Redfern. It would be fabulous, I think.
No.
No. Okay.
Doesn't work for me.
But voiceover. When presenters have to do voiceovers, they do put on a silly voice.
I know. People all do. Even when you answer the phone, you have a phone voice. I agree with that. But this woman's voice is not real. It's just, why would you talk like that?
Well, because when you're doing voiceovers...
No, you have a listen.
All right, I will.
You have a listen
what
to
I'm
it
saying
and come
is
back to
all voiceovers
me.
Annoy me.
Mm.
As indeed do all the QVC people trying to sell you things really with that fake enthusiasm.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Look at that. That is the most amazing pork chop I have ever seen.
I know.
And it's quite mesmerising from that point of view. Do you know how you have to audition for QVC?
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is really interesting. If you want to be a QVC presenter, right, they get you in and they sit you down. And I'm going to do it to you, Nikki, OK? You can do your audition for QVC.
I don't want to work for QVC.
I know you don't, but it's interesting. They give you, I'm giving it to you, a pencil.
Oh, wow.
And you have to do 15 minutes on it.
15 minutes?
15 bloody minutes.
I would struggle to do 15
seconds. No. Of course you do.
Look at this wonderful writing object. It's called a pencil, and this particular one is very fetching because it's in black and yellow stripes. And not only that, at the very top end, we have an eraser.
She's doing it.
So this lead pencil, which you could use for so many different reasons, is so versatile because obviously you can write with it and then you can turn it over and erase what you have written. And another thing you could do with it, you could tuck it behind your ear. I'm not going on anymore, please. I don't want us to take all your time. People are ringing up to listen, to speak to you.
It was very good.
Did I get the job?
You don't want the job.
Want the job.
Let's take some calls, shall we? We'll rush to Waze. Waze.
Hi there.
Hi, is that Waze?
Tommy. Yeah, speaking, Tommy.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Good, thank you. Surprisingly well.
Yeah, I used to listen to you on a Friday afternoon. I used to do painting and decorating, and you still had a wonderful hour in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then when I started doing taxing in 2002, you used to make my day because I used to listen to you, and then this chap you introduced called Joe Holland, and he used to go all the way till 5 in the morning.
Right, hello? I don't remember that entirely. Joe Holland, did you say, or Jules Holland?
Yeah, it was after Jules Holland or Joe Holland. Joe Holland, after your show. On Saturday night?
I don't know, because I used to have to catch the train home.
You did Saturday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then you had the wonderful hour,
yes.
Angry hour, happy hour. And then there's this chap called Joe Holland.
Yeah.
And he was, like, brilliant, both of you.
Shall I tell you something that really, really diverts me at the moment?
Yeah.
And it's not... You're not the first caller to intrude this thought into my grey matter.
Yeah.
But there is a calibre of listener...
Yeah.
...who remembers me better than I do.
No, that was my night. It was. Like,
I know, but can you see that? Because... I have a blank spot about a number of the things that you've reminded me that I've done.
Yeah.
And you're not the first caller to do that.
Mm.
And I genuinely find that quite interesting.
No, but...
It means either that my lapse into alcohol has had a lasting effect and I'm starting to get little black blind spots, or that other people pay greater attention to people like me than people like me do.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
It was the four of you at the top of the scene. I mean, you, Mike Dickin, James Will and Joe Holland. These are the only ones I used to listen to.
Fine.
Talk radio. It was just unbelievable.
Okay.
But you were the funniest and most entertaining.
I am very funny. There's no question about that. I am extremely witty and very amusing. Thank you. I trained as a stand-up comedian. I say trained.
You said that earlier. I didn't know that about you.
I worked as a stand-up comedian, and I was sort of trained by a man called Tommy Trinder.
I've heard that name.
He was a music hall legend. He was just at the end of his career. He was the resident entertainer at Butlin's Bognor Regis, and I was a start-up kid. And I was also a Fulham football fan, and he was the chairman of Fulham Football Club. So I got talking to him in the wings about that. And then he said, "What do you want to do, boy?" And I said, I wouldn't mind trying this comedy lark. So he taught me about 10 little tricks, and I went out there and did them. And it was easy because he taught me the tricks. He said, "First of all, boy, you've got to get your first laugh before you've even opened your mouth. Because if the audience see that you're young, they're going to worry that you're not funny. And when a comedian isn't funny, the audience think it's their fault and they don't want to embarrass you. So make sure they know that you're funny before you even put the microphone up to your lips." So I said, "How do I do that?" He said, "The easiest way," he said, "if you're coming out on stage, is trip over your own feet. Trip over your own feet and then point to the spot as if there's a nail coming out of the floorboards." I tried it and it worked. I said, "Okay, then what?" He said, "Right." He said, "You've got to get another laugh fast." He said, "Get the microphone on the stand and pretend it's stuck. You're trying to pull it off and it's stuck. You pull it out eventually and it whacks you in the head. Big noise goes around the theatre. Everybody laughs. You act in pain and embarrassed. Bigger laugh.
Brilliant.
I did all this, and it just works. And then he said, tell 3 quick gags. Don't hang about. Don't wait for the laughter. 3 one-liners. Boom, 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 boom. And then stand there and say to the audience, right, here we go. Because you've got them.
Yeah.
And I did it, and it worked. He said, then you do a joke in which you do some funny voices, or you do a funny walk to prove to them that you're not just a gag man, you're a funny man. And then they know they've got the complete article. And then he said, do that for however long you're supposed to be on. And then on your last gag, you say to them, I must just tell you this before I go. Because that way, you'll get a laugh and a big round of applause. And you go off waving, and the theatre manager who's standing in the wings thinks, this boy's good.
We'll have him back.
We'll have him back. He told me 10 things like, I tell you what.
That is brilliant.
Dynamite. But that was when comedians did that. I don't think it works for the likes of, you know, Stuart Lee and all the great alternative comedies, comedians anymore.
So what made you not go into that?
I found it easy, so I put it in my back pocket, yeah. And I said, if all else fails, I'll go back to it. I'll be a comedian. And I'm still thinking. You're tuned to Talk Radio. It's Tommy Boyd. Nikki's here, and the gang are behind the screen. If you want to give us a call, it's...
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. It's 0344 499 1000.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
We'll get you talking.
So do you ever get a tune stuck in your head? Of course you do,
yeah.
In the morning. You hear it on the radio?
Yeah.
Here's my problem. I do a school run in the morning, and then I go to the supermarket and do the supermarket run, okay? And most mornings, I use my side lights. We all seem to have our side lights on our cars on now all the time. So I get to the supermarket car park, and I forget to turn the lights off. And as I take the ignition key out of the dashboard, I get this warning noise, and it goes like this. And I turn off the side lights. And then I'm in the supermarket, and I'm doing what I normally do in the supermarket, which is go the wrong way. In retail, we're called salmon.
Do you do it on purpose?
No, I just like to start off with the bread and then work my way around to the greengroceries. That's how I like to do it. And you meet a lot of people because you have to zigzag with your...
You're that annoying person coming the wrong way.
Salmon, we're called. We're known. Mm. They know us. Mm. And I'm browsing at the delicatessen counter and I start humming this. And I want to know what this tune is. And this is every morning and I can be doing this until midday. Do-do-do-do-do-do. You know it?
Yeah.
And I'm humming it.
Oh, now you've got me going.
What is it, though? Everybody. Kath knows. Come and see. Kath. No, she's going to tell us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you want to know it?
Yes, I do.
It's the Mexican hat dance.
I still don't know what that is.
Because it goes into.
Yeah.
The girl's a genius. The girl's a genius.
Yeah. I'm getting
You're
a
not
clearer,
sure, are
well,
you?
Well, no, it's just I'm getting a clearer picture of this woman now because they speak Spanish in Mexico as well.
Yeah.
So, you know. Mm. I went to Mexico. I worked in Mexico. And all the Mexican men, because I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I speak Castilian Spanish, which is una cerveza, por favor, señor. They all called me a mariposa. You don't know what that means.
No.
Kath knows what that
means. Go on.
That was a puff. Because Mexican men are very sort of, they're all very...
They're masculine, aren't they?
Well, no, they think they are. They think
are.
They're all so... They're macho. All their chests out and they all, you know, I'd have a tequila race with 3 or 4 of them. And I'm from West London. I can drink. I think the drinking culture in West London is as proud as any nation's anywhere. And I saw these Mexicans off quite easily. Tequila is nothing. So they didn't call me a mariposa after that. But so that's it. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Let's take a few calls, shall we? We've got Dave from Hove is next. Dave.
Heidi, ho.
Heidi, hi.
Well, I voted. Bloody election. I phoned in originally on the Beast with Two Backs, but you corrected yourself before I got an opportunity. But as I'm here, I must say how much more tolerant I find that moneysupermarket.com advert on the radio nowhere near as offensive.
No, which one?
Well, on the radio, it's fine. You don't see anything. On the TV, you've got those strange-looking dudes in high heels.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you.
Do you know what? That drives me mad, that advert on the television.
Oh, thank you. You've got class.
I say to my husband quite often, can you imagine that these advertising agency people have gone to the people and said, we've got this great idea, and they've shown them the idea, and they've gone, brilliant. What the hell's that got to do with any form of insurance?
Well, so it's about impact, isn't it? And it's about getting you interested and getting you wondering.
It annoys me.
It annoys you.
They've changed it now.
You know, we were talking...
He-Man and Skeletor.
Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about it, because I think the station carries the ads. So that you get if you were to mention a commercial that is being carried by the radio station that works for you, what happens is you get a phone call at about 4 o'clock in the morning and you open it and there's four men in leather coats standing there from the radio authority and they say, Starlin sent us.
And, excellent. I've got a lot of starlings come to my feeder.
And Starlin said to us, I'll show you that... Shut up, Dave. Now, you talk about commercials. Shall I tell you one that does also annoy me? And nobody here will be able to recollect this, but this one annoys me. And if I remember it, I go around the supermarket muttering it, right? It's one of those ones with Winston Wolfe. You know Winston Wolfe?
Mm-hmm.
Winston Wolfe, direct
line. Oh, yes.
And he goes into a flat and he says, so you're a property magnate. And the guy goes, it's only my wife's old flat. And he says it like that, right? It's only my wife's old flat. And I'll find myself standing there looking at the veg in Waitrose, going, it's only my wife. Do it, Dave, do it. You do it.
I can't you do it so well.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I can't do but Jack D, but I can do the man in the...
It's only my wife.
He's a little bald man and he's painting the wall. I can picture him.
No, not him.
Harvey Keitel.
Well done.
Yes, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah. Takes me ages. Every time it comes, I've forgotten it again.
It's only my wife's old flat.
You're so good at that. You're just seriously something wrong
I know,
wrong
but
with
then
you,
I'm sir. Standing there in the supermarket doing it, like in Tourette's fashion. Do you know what I mean? I don't know I'm doing it.
And why in the supermarket?
I don't know.
Why not?
Yeah, I suppose why not?
I don't know. We don't know. We think we're so clever. Every civilization that's ever lived on planet Earth, and indeed the ones that lurk in the future, and bear in mind that I probably know what they're like, believes that the level of intelligence that they have reached is all there is for humanity to discover. But when it comes to the human brain, the thing that we use to think about those things, we know nothing. 300 years ago, we didn't know that blood circulated around the body. And now we know that, and we know everything about the human body. We had a caller on earlier whose daughter had a heart transplant at the age of 12. That's how far medicine, physical medicine, has travelled in the last 300 years. But when it comes to psychology, we don't know why we think what we think. What is the point of what we think? You, Nikki, you listening, you could all get up and walk across the room now because your legs do exactly what you ask them to do. But you won't know what you're going to be thinking when you get to the other side of that room. You have no idea. Your brain will determine that for you as a result of what comes out of the cocktail of triggers and stimuluses that will come through your eyes, through your ears, and from the back of your own mind in the time it takes you to walk from one side of the room to the other. Now, there's a word that we don't use anymore because it has unfortunate connotations, and that is spasticity. We don't use it anymore. There are other phrases. But if you take the literal definition of spasticity, we all have spastic brains that fly in every direction, and we cannot control them. And until mindfulness takes over and we are able to watch a thought go by and go, I don't want that thought. I had that thought 10 minutes ago. I'm getting obsessive. Let me never have that thought again, at least for the rest of the day. But it won't happen like that because something else will trigger that thought. And before you know where you are, you get comfortable holding on to a whole bunch of thoughts that you know are making you unhappy, but you think it's some kind of a reality. Have I made my point?
Very well.
I think so, yes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Had some good calls this evening, I think.
We have indeed.
Let's see if Ian is up there. Ian, welcome to Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Right, I've got a bit of a question for you.
Okay.
So, I've got it, right. So, would you ever knowingly be attacked once per day by a killer badger at a set time? Or know that someone's going to attack you once per day, not knowing when, but you can defend yourself?
Both. I'm greedy.
Both.
Yeah, I'd like both of those situations. They're so intriguing. I don't want to actually, if they became genuine options, I think life is so interesting that you couldn't turn either of them down. What would your preference be, Ian?
I go for the ninja, because I feel like I can fight back then, you know. I like that idea that I can fight back. You know, you can retaliate against it.
Mm. Thank you for your call, Ian. That was a really interesting...
You see, that's the whole thing about the whole mind.
Yeah.
He's come up with that. From where?
You see, we think we're so clever, but we don't know how life began on this planet. Even the scientists who've said, oh, there's definitely no God. So life began on this planet as a result of some sort of primeval slime fermenting. And, well, if that's all it was, then why can't they reproduce it in a laboratory?
It don't.
They can't.
No.
They can't make life. All right?
And you start going into this, it is literally mind-blowing.
We don't know
it?
Why the dinosaurs died out.
No.
And we don't know what gravity is. That one tickles me. We all know that gravity exists. God only knows. But nobody's got any idea why it is. And here's the one that tickled me. Right? If I jump out of a tree and I'm rushing towards the Earth because I'm gravitating towards it, the Earth is moving slightly towards me. Slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Towards me, because it is gravitated towards me. They know that, but they don't know what it is. You see, in about 100 years' time, we're going to seem so ignorant when they've actually managed to work out some of these things, and they'll laugh at us. You know, we laugh at the Victorians for sending children up... We don't laugh, actually, we condemn.
Yes.
For sending children up chimneys, for putting women in poorhouses and workhouses, and jailing Oscar Wilde because he deigned to have a boyfriend and giving him hard labour. We think how terrible they were. But they'll look back at us in 100 years' time and they'll go, we were terrible, we were terrible, those people, in the early 21st century. They won't be able to believe some of the things that we did. I think a lot of it will be with the way we treat animals and
yes.
Farm animals in particular, and, you know, animals that end up on our plate.
Well, there's all sorts of things that go on that are terrible in this world, aren't there? So, yeah, but it's always going to be like that, though, isn't it?
Let's rush to Scott, who's next on the line. Scott, welcome to Talk Radio.
Tommy, it's great to talk to you again.
Okay.
Is it okay? You seem then that I've been zoning in and out of your conversation, and it seems then you were talking about, it seemed like you believed in God for a second there. I just wanted to know.
Well, I don't know, do
that.
I? Nobody does.
No, nobody does.
No, I'm an agnostic, I suppose, technically. I don't think I'm clever enough to be able to get my head around that one.
Right, okay.
So maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
Right, okay then.
Do you know then?
I think I do know, yeah.
What's the answer? Is there one?
The answer is nobody knows.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The actual answer, you say.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen Hawking said that, and he's not stupid.
No, he's not. He's not figured out how to walk, though, has he?
Not steady.
This is a problem, that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yet he's still cleverer than you.
Add me to one of your the long list of annoying people that you that you're fondly writing at the minute.
Mm.
Can you keep me on the show, Tommy? Can I just stay on and just kind of comment?
Oh, I thought you were coming up with the name of a person that you wanted to discuss about being irritating. Who were you going to say?
I've been.
You're going to have to lift it a little bit, Scott. If you want to be part of the show, you're going to have to lift it. Let me ask you a few questions about you. Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
It's blindingly obvious you're sitting down, mate. Stand up.
Is it because I sound really lazy?
Stand up.
I can't actually stand up at the minute. I'm too comfortable.
Stand up. You're not going to stay on the show if you're sitting down.
Okay, okay. Have you ever seen
a performer on stage, a comedian or a singer, sitting down? People stand.
Yeah,
you stand and you're more entertaining when you stand. Everybody's more entertaining when they stand. It's a simple fact.
Are you standing now?
Of course I'm standing now. I always stand. I've always stood on the radio.
Okay.
If I can, I walk around with a microphone on a lead so that I can put my whole body into it. That's what you should do. You should make that commitment. Sitting down? So you're standing up now, are you?
I've been on hold that long. I've got that tired. That's the problem.
Well, stand up then and get some blood circulating through those ill-defined calves of yours. What?
I'm stood up.
I want to imagine where you... What room are you in? I want to imagine where you are and what you're doing.
I'm in a basement somewhere. I can't...
It sounds like
legal
it.
Reasons.
It sounds like it. You need to be higher up. Do you know what they train salespeople to do at some of these... coaching classes, they train salespeople, if they're going for a big kill, right, on the phone, to stand, not just stand up, but to stand on their desk.
No way.
Yes, and you try it. You do feel more powerful. That's why Lou Grade also always used to smoke those cigars the size of a telegraph pole. He was about to phone somebody up and try and close a deal, and somebody had given him a cigar that was so big it was a joke, and he decided to light it up before he made the phone call. And he noticed that sitting there with that huge cigar on in his mouth, he suddenly felt really powerful and really omnipotent and really plausible, and so he kept the cigar thing throughout his life.
Is that because he had a phallic object in his mouth? Is that what makes him kind of feel powerful?
No, that's disappointing, really. You see, you need to get out of the basement. Go up to street level.
Are you on a mobile? Yeah.
Go up to street level. Go up to street level. Go out your door and go up to street level. You'll begin to perk up. You'll become more animated, more engaging. We'll form what's called a social attachment. Go on. Do it.
I've done it.
You're on the street now, are you?
Yeah, I'm on the street, yeah.
You've got fresh air.
Yeah.
All right, cold air.
Yeah.
And are you moving about?
Yeah, of course I'm moving about,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well, start pacing up and down like a caged polar bear and start to feel some of the animation getting into your body and getting into your mind, your thought processes, your articulacy. You're beginning now, aren't you, to salivate. You're beginning now to see and hear and feel important concepts and concise, compact and compelling ways of expressing those concepts, aren't you, Scott? Yes.
I don't know, to be honest, mate.
You sounded just like Paul McKenna then, and it didn't work, did it?
No, I think he's about 2% better than he was when he started.
He did sound a little bit more energised.
I'm going to have to crack on, Scott. No offence. Call me again sometime. It's almost like a form of oxygen for some people, isn't it? Knowing that they're on the phone and that their phone is through somewhere. It's like having been in a bath escape with one of those oxygen tubes going all the way down to the bottom of the thing. And you're... I'm still alive. There's somebody on the other end of my mobile phone. Remind us of the number, although we've only got 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. It's 0344 499 1000.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
We'll get you talking.
Let's go straight to our next caller, who is going to be Alex, I think. Alex, welcome to Talk Radio. Hello.
Hi, Tommy. Hey. Thrilled to be speaking to you after all these years. I had a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
To do with the passage of time, really. I wondered what were your thoughts on the last few years since you've actually been on the radio. And also, you mentioned earlier about having lived, or you feel that you've lived in the future, and that you already kind of have a memory almost of things that have happened before they've actually happened. I was wondering if you could expand on that, give some examples.
Well, not with any great clarity, but what happened was this. About 10 or 15 years ago, I was on holiday, and I'd taken my golf clubs. And if you're a lone golfer, you get paired with somebody else because they don't like to see lone golfers. We're called wombles because we're one ball, wombles.
Yeah.
And I was paired with this guy and he was an American scientist and he was fascinating. He was so bright and he was doing research work. He was being paid large amounts of money by an American corporation to investigate time. And he said the latest thinking is that everything that has happened is happening and will happen is already there. And it's rather like if you get a big book and you open it at random and you're at page 647, that's where you are. But pages 1 to 647 are still there.
Yeah.
And pages 647 to page 1120 is there. It's not undetermined. It's just that you haven't opened it at that page.
I said
to him, I think it's your turn to tee off. Because that was just too clever for me. And however,
but that's a good analogy to explaining isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think in that case that free will's probably an illusion because you only ever got one shot at making a decision?
Say the first bit, I didn't catch it. What's an illusion?
Free will.
No, say it again.
Free will.
Free will?
Yeah.
Free will. Okay.
Is it an illusion?
I don't know. It depends which episode of Star Trek, the original series, I'm watching. Do you know what I mean? No, free will is not possible, but you can make your own freedom within the confines of the imprisonment which we all have to endure, which is we don't get to choose the bodies that we're existing in, do we? We don't get to choose the time at which we live. We don't get to choose the family that we're born into. So there are a great many imprisonments that we simply can't avoid, but there are some options within that prison life that are available to us, and it's important for us to give them due consideration, cherish the opportunity, and make sure that our decision is as good as it could possibly be. I don't know whether that's a great deal of help, Alex, but thank you for asking the question anyway. It was flattering that you thought that somebody as punch drunk with life as me might know the answer. Tony's next. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tommy. How are you?
I'm surprisingly well, thank you. How are you?
Good, excellent. I know you don't like people asking you that continually all night, but I fell into that trap straight away.
Well, I worked at an American radio station where they were very, very fierce with the callers, and the first thing they said was they would say to each person who was coming on air, don't ask him how he is!
Exactly.
Like that.
Don't ask him how he is! And I did it straight away.
Oh, well, this is because this isn't Cincinnati.
No, exactly. So I've been listening to quite a few of your shows over the past few years since you've been off air, and some of the exchanges have been really, really thought-provoking, and they really empowered me a lot, I'd say, over the past, as I say, 10, 15 years. And there was one call where you talked about, as people get older, they sometimes lose the ability to open themselves up to new experiences, learn new skills, and you had a word for it, and it was called neotony.
Mm.
Neotony. Neotony. Oh, that's because I've been trying to look it up.
No, N-E-O-T-O-N-Y.
Oh, there you go. And that was my next question. How do you spell it? So you've answered that. Thank you very much. My question is, have you still got it?
What, neotony? Yes.
Yeah.
It's best explained in a book that Desmond Morris wrote called The Naked Ape, which he talks about the fact that chimpanzees, for example, which some people consider to be the closest life form to us on Earth, the young of the chimpanzees are able to look after themselves at a much earlier age than human babies are, but they lose their neoteny after something like 18 months to 2 years. They lose their inability to want to learn. And they settle into their old habits. But he said in human beings, generally, the desire to want to learn starts to taper off from around about the age of 14 in the average person. But there are some people who remain neotenous well into their 20s and 30s, and some people remain neotenous until they die. They're always interested in the next thing that they don't know, right? But an acid test, I think, of somebody who has neoteny is, do you read?
Right, okay.
Do you read?
Yeah. I do.
Do you read books?
No.
Then maybe your neoteny needs a little bit of...
polishing up.
Yeah, just, you know, fan the flames a little bit.
Exactly. No, I agree. So what was the last skill that you learnt?
The
last skill you learnt?
The last skill I learned was Chinese poetry.
Wow. Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Can you give me an example?
Okay. I don't know if the
light. You're on the spot, haven't I?
Not at all. No, not at all. This is a Chinese poet called Po Qi, who is probably the best known Chinese poet of all time. And he was like the Beatles of China in the year 800 AD. Okay, everybody knew his poems. Everybody would shout his poems. around. This is Po Chi writing on being 60. And by the way, okay. Chinese poems are very accessible. They're not like the difficult to get round things that we do in the West. You ready?
Yeah,
it's very short. Between 30 and 40, one is distracted by the five lusts. Between 70 and 80, one is prey to 100 diseases. But from 50 to 60, one is free from all ills. Calm and still, the heart enjoys rest. I have put behind me love and greed. He's 60 years of age. I've put behind me love and greed. I have done with profit and fame. I'm still short of illness and decay and far from a decrepit age. Strength of limb I still possess to seek the rivers and the hills. Still my heart has spirit enough to listen to flutes and strings. At leisure I now open new wine and taste several cups. And drunk I recall old poems and sing a whole volume.
Wow.
It's dead simple, mate. He's just saying 60 is the best age. And that was 800 years ago. And it's not complicated, is it? I know.
Yeah.
So go and get 170 Chinese poems by translations by Arthur Whaley. And I'll talk to you in again another 15 years.
Excellent. And just fine. Thank you very much for empowering me to be able to listen and not to keep talking, because that's the biggest quality, I think, that I've learned over you over the past couple of years. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, nice man.
Very nice man. We'll rush over to Moses, allegedly. Good if it
Tommy, so good to speak to you, mate. Can't believe you're on the radio at the moment. Listen, you brought up a quick point about only discovering that they really don't know nothing about gravity anymore.
Mm.
And you know what that ties into is obviously the flat Earth.
It is flat.
It is flat, Tom, yeah?
Yeah, it is flat. It's flat. It's obvious.
You're my main man.
You only have to look at it to see that it's flat.
Isn't it? Tell me about it. You can't believe it's round. How can water hold on to a circular ball?
Listen to this one. Here's my theory, right? If it was round,
yeah,
we'd always be walking downhill.
No, a bigger one than that. Yeah, yeah.
Does it feel like you're walking downhill? Because if on the top of a ball, then any way you go, right, left,
down,
backwards, forwards, you're going downhill.
Yeah.
Does it feel like you're walking downhill?
Nope.
When you're on your way to Tesco's?
No.
No. It doesn't, because it's flat.
Right. An even bigger one. That Bumgardner that done the highest jump ever. He jumped in New Mexico, yeah? He took off from New Mexico. He landed not more than about 10 miles where he took off. It took him how long to come down? Was it an hour, something like that?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I agree with you.
You know the guy that made the highest world record jump out of...
he went about 9 miles up, didn't he?
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, mate. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, he took off at New Mexico and he landed, I think it was, I may be wrong, but not more than about 10 miles. Now, if you work out the speed of the Earth that's travelling, he would have ended up God knows where. Mm. He wouldn't have landed where he landed. It's a physical impossibility.
I have a friend in America who tries to undermine my flat Earth beliefs by pointing out...
All the time.
I know it.
I get it all the time.
Disbelievers.
Honestly.
I go around knocking on people's doors on a Sunday morning in a suit with a woman with me, and I say, have you heard the good news?
Tom, the Earth is flat. Can I join your society, please, sir? I'll join your society. I'll be a member.
Okay, we're called the Unreliable Witnesses.
The Unreliable Witnesses. Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful, Tommy.
And
Tommy,
we
listen,
offered to lend people a pamphlet and come back for it next week. I've got to go, Moses, but it's always good to talk to biblical, mythological characters.
Obviously, mate. Listen, also, Amanda Holden. Can't get it.
That was on my list. She was on my list as well.
Oh, irritating.
So sycophantic on that show. I have to watch it because I can't stand her so much. I don't know what it is. I should get over it. I should get past it, but I can't. It's just one of my big bugbears of life.
All right, thanks, Moses. Got a crack on. Nice to talk to you. Steve Ward will, I think, bring this session to a close. Steve.
Evening, Tommy.
Hey.
I just wanted to say it's a pleasure hearing you back on the radio again.
Cheers.
And can I wish my mate happy birthday as well?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Why would I say no? Would I? Go on. Who's your friend?
Okay, happy Mark Sawyer. It's his 50th on Sunday.
Okay.
So happy birthday, Mark, and thank you for a good night. And it's good hearing you on the radio again, Tommy.
Pleasure.
and I hope you do some more shows on Talk Radio in the future.
Okay, Steve, thanks for your call.
And I wish you a good night. Thank you, bye.
So if his friend's birthday is in May, what does that make him?
That's Taurus, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm rubbish at astrology. So is there anything in it? I did meet somebody who told me some spooky things once he'd found out what my birth date was and the time I was born.
But saying that, I always read my horoscope and I believe what I want to believe and I discard the rest. You do, don't you?
People ask me what my star sign is. I usually reply, it's sort of funny, but not terribly funny. I always say, I'm a Sagittarian. I don't eat anything that was born in December. Hey, here's a good question for you. I was having this argument in the supermarket this morning. How many live animals do they sell in the average supermarket? How many live animals are for sale? And do they need a license, special license, for selling live animals in Tesco's?
Of course they don't sell live animals.
Oh, you see, you're wrong, aren't you?
How can I be wrong?
Well, on the fish counter, they've got mussels.
Oh.
No, come on. Because Rick Stein always says...
That's not classed as an animal.
Why not?
It's a fish.
It's alive. If it can die, it's alive. Mind you, that could be applied to a carrot. And what is the status of the bacteria in live yoghurt? It's alive.
Yes.
It's not dead. It's alive.
That's
and it's not a vegetable.
Slightly tenuous, I think.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, the mussels one was good. Yeah. I'm not going with the yoghurt.
You see, the other thing that distracts me is knowing that in the average ejaculation, there are 800,000 sperms. And if you're being really pedantic about the pro-life thing, surely each of those sperms should somehow be saved from death. Somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you do that.
Keep practicing.
Do you know what that sounds like, don't you?
Yes.
But I mean, how long do they live?
Not very long at all.
How long do they live when they're out there?
They don't.
I didn't expect this show, which has been populated, I think, with some incredible callers and some reasonably good presentation as well, would drift towards a very sharp, if officious, out time of 57:39 in this sort of slightly tacky way.
Mucky.
So I'm just going to spend the last 10 seconds that we have with the listener, whether you're live or whether you're podcasting or whatever. Good evening, good day, and thank you for your company. And I hope somewhere along the way you enjoyed our company.
Election 2017 on Talk Radio.
The manifestos, the mandates, the mother of all radio stations.
I mean, why shouldn't the public know more about what's going on?
Talk Radio.
Are you serious?